The Joe Rogan Experience podcast is brought to you by The Fleshlight. If you go to joerogan.net and click on the link and enter in the code name Rogan, you will get... That might be me. Yeah. Oops. If you click on the link and enter in the code name Rogan, you will get 15% off the number one sex toys for men. So go get on that. If you needed,
get on. I love that we continue to do them live.
Yeah, these I'd like it too. Fuck it.
Ridiculous.
If you had any doubts whatsoever, if I'm interested in selling out, there you go. I'll take your money, bitch. What you got? Shazam, brothers and sisters, we're gonna go on a journey today. All right, we're back from a journey, back from Las Vegas. Well, I met Anthony Bourdain, one of my heroes. I got fucking starstruck. You know who Anthony Bourdain is? My friend Jan Irvin is here.
I don't know Anthony Bourdain.
Do you watch TV at all, or are you just fucking reading books all day, tripping
on
mushrooms?
You know what, Joe? I haven't had a TV turned on around me in probably a couple of years.
Wow, you're completely out of the cultural loop, reading fucking textbooks on mushrooms from the 50s. What happened? Nothing. Anthony, what'd you do? Did you change the volume?
Yeah, I'm just
something?
Turning it down.
Why don't you stop doing that, bitch? Fucking weirdo. Leave that shit alone. Anthony Bourdain's a chef, and he's got this television show. He was a chef. Now he's pretty much like sort of this traveling guy who samples food in different restaurants all throughout the world, but more as like a commentator on the cultures of these places, you know, and uses food as sort of like a way to get you to know the culture. You know, uses like eating with indigenous people in these like tribes and weird fucking crazy places. I mean, it's a badass fucking show.
Interesting.
And it's my favorite show. And so I met him, and, you know, it's the weirdest fucking thing when you admire someone and you like their work and they know who you are too, you know, and all of a sudden you're talking about stuff and he came to my comedy show. I'm like, it seems like it shouldn't freak me out at this point in my life, but I'm still like, holy shit, Anthony Bourdain's in the fucking audience. Like, it was weird, you know? It was interesting. He's a bad motherfucker. I admire him very much. He's one of the most interesting guys on television. So he's going to do the podcast. He said he gets asked two things on Twitter. One, go fuck himself. And two, if he would do the Joe Rogan podcast. That's his words.
That's awesome.
Yeah. He's cool as fuck, dude. And his wife is a fiend for mixed martial arts. His wife takes jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai, and they have a padded-up room in their house, and, you know, she's got fucking trainers teaching her how to strangle people and shit.
Wow.
Yeah, she's a freak, dude. She's, like, so, like, aggressively into it. It was crazy watching, like, her, like, fucking scream and yell and get all excited at the weigh-ins and shit, you know? And he's sort of, it seems like he's sort of, okay, well, this is what she loves. I'll go along for the ride. But it just, you know, I don't know if he would be into it other than that. You know, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah.
It didn't seem like he was as into it as she is, though. She seemed really into it. His wife is like a fucking super fan.
She's like it's like owning a gun. She's his gun, probably.
Yeah. She'll fuck you up, dude. She's into it, man. Yeah, he like tweeted once, you know, that I think her name is Octavia. Octavia Bourdain choked out her trainer, put him to sleep.
Wow.
He's tweeting about it.
That's interesting. I don't know if I could date a girl that was more stronger and tougher and crazier than me. You know, I need to, you know, take control of situations. I need to make sure I can do that. Not like, no, I don't want to watch whatever gay movie you want to watch. I mean, sorry, silly movie that you want to watch. And then she'll just choke me out and wake up and, you know.
Well, it would be more of a struggle than that, I would hope. Learn some defense after a while, son.
Have a taser.
Protect your neck. Yeah, I think that's a weird dynamic, man, when the girl can kick your ass. I don't think I'd be into that.
Yeah.
But you know what? Some people are – everybody's different, man.
Yeah.
And he's obviously not into physical fitness, and he's a wild dude willing to take some chances.
Yeah.
He'll ride that crazy snake.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? he'll jump on that ayahuasca snake and go for a ride.
I bet he's the best pussy eater.
You think so?
Yeah.
He's just a champion because he's so into food?
I mean, that's his job. I'm the best eater in the world.
Well, he's more of a cook than he eats. Like, the best eater would be that man versus food guy who just eats piles of shitty food every week.
Or used to. Doesn't he not eat anymore?
Yeah, that's what Bert Kreischer was telling us. Or are we not supposed to say he was telling us that?
Wait,
well, they've already started showing it. But he doesn't do the stunts anymore because his fucking body was falling apart. Because this poor guy's eating, you know, 20-pound cheeseburgers every night while they're filming. And you know what I mean?
Like, really?
He eats these ridiculous food challenges. challenges where he would have to eat, like, you know, in some insane amounts of food, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I never really watched it. I saw clips.
I wonder, you know, if it's that or if he's just dating a girl. And she's like, oh, my God, you're getting so fat. And he's like, you know what I mean? Well, like, dude, you can't control the
food. How could you possibly eat that much food?
Yeah.
It's terrible for you. But, you know, getting fat is really unhealthy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you've been fat and you've been skinny. You know, don't you feel way better when you're skinny?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I also like eating. You know, I was I was thinking about that the other day. I was like, you know, when I was on a hardcore diet, I made sure I only ate certain kinds of food. You know, like I would only eat like chickens and salads and stuff like that. But then I was like, you know what? If I wanted lasagna, I couldn't have lasagna, you know?
Right.
So then to me, it's like, wait a second. You know what? I mean, I would rather be somewhere kind of in the middle where I still eat healthy most of the time, but I need to eat fucking bad once in a while. When I was in Vegas, that is the best fucking food. Vegas has the best food.
Well, you only have an issue in that you don't exercise.
Yeah.
If you exercise, you're
still waiting for 24-hour fitness to open up in Burbank. It's just sitting
there. Yeah, other than that, it's impossible to work out. You're so unmotivated. All you need is one thing to be wrong. Radio doesn't work in my car. I'm not going to drive all the way to the gym with no radio. Fuck it. When they fix my radio, then I'll start going to the gym again.
I agree.
You will find...
I hate exercise, but if I do it, I want to do it right. I want to have a nice gym. It's so much easier to have a gym at your disposal.
If Anthony Bourdain's wife can learn jiu-jitsu, you girl,
I don't want to do jiu-jitsu.
You big girl, why don't you learn something?
I don't need jiu-jitsu.
Well, the good thing about it is
it
tires you out.
You know what? I've known you for, 8 years at least, you know, and you've worked with him for 8 years, and, you know, Joe and Eddie were trying to get me to train in jiu-jitsu 8 years ago, but I don't hang out with them every day, so what the fuck, dude?
Well, you would have done it.
I would have totally done it I didn't have an hour and a half, 2 hour drive every time. But I mean, like, what the fuck is your excuse?
My knee is my biggest excuse. We've talked about this already 1,000 times. I have
He's
bad
got a
knee.
Tricky knee.
And jiu-jitsu is all about fucking twisting bones and bodies, you know, and that does not seem like it's a good idea. Like, hey, do I want to have knee problems for the rest of my life? Do I want to deal with all the fucking bullshit that's going to come along with doing jiu-jitsu, like fucking getting ringworm and all that crap? Or do I want to get a membership at 24-hour fitness?
Sounds like someone clearly is a glass half empty sort of fella.
Yeah.
You know, there's positive benefits from these things, man. It's not like there's only all these negatives. You're saying
no, I'm sure
all these negatives, as if, you know, there's nothing for you to be learned there.
Also, I didn't have a brother growing up, and so like rolling around with a guy still does not.
You're worried about getting boners.
Still, no, it's just like if it was a guy versus girl jiu-jitsu, I'm 100% in. I would fuck my knee. Who cares? You know, I just don't feel like rolling around on the floor with a guy. I don't know why. Same reason if somebody goes, hey, would you rather hang out with three guys and watch sports, or would you rather hang out with three girls and watch porn?
Yeah, I would have to say that it's sort of a learned thing. You know, it's like an acquired taste.
Yeah,
it doesn't. I've been doing it for so long; it's just totally normal to me. But there's times that I've thought about it. There's times when I'm rolling with a guy and I know his sweat is in my mouth.
Yeah,
there's just no getting around it. There's no getting around it.
Yeah,
like if a guy, like say if you are like you're doing no gi and you know a guy's on top of you and you got him in half guard or something like that and he's sweating, his chest could easily be on your face.
Yeah.
And you're both drenched with sweat.
See, if I had to do it, I would definitely do gi with two comforters wrapped around me or something.
Yeah, you're exchanging fluids. You know, you're exchanging your sweat, your moisture. I mean, they're not really exchanging, but you're getting it on each other.
Definitely.
You know, it's not going internally, but it does go into
skin
scratches.
Skin is the largest organ of the body, and shit does go right through the skin. So.
Well, that's it does. It does. Well, that's why men have to constantly worry about mat herpes. Mat herpes are real. You have to worry about that. You have to worry about skin, like ringworm type shit. You have to worry about staph infections. A lot of
and
guys
men
get
are
staph
dirty
infections.
Motherfuckers, man. Men, most like, people
dirty,
like
bro.
Ari that only change their sheets like once every month and a half. You know,
that's silly. Fuck. He wonders why he got staph. That fucking guy would just go to jiu-jitsu and then not shower. I was like, are you crazy? You would just roll around with dudes and then not shower? Why don't I just have people just shit on you?
Yeah.
You know, just have people just piss all over your body.
Oh, man.
You know, like, what are you doing, man? You got to clean yourself off, man.
So so he got staph then? What?
Yeah, he didn't even know he had staph. We were playing pool and he's limping around. And I go, what's going on, man? He goes, I got bit by a spider.
This. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I did hear about this.
Yeah. He pulls his pants up to show me the spider bite. I'm like, dude, that looks like a staph infection. You should go to the hospital right now to get it checked. Like, you can't just walk around like that. But he didn't know. He had no idea that you could actually get something like that from exercise, from jiu-jitsu. You know, you don't really hear about people getting staph infections unless it's from surgery, you know?
Yeah. Well, most sports, you don't get staph. Like, when you're playing tennis, you don't get staph. You don't, you know.
Yeah. Football players can get it. Yeah. They get it sometimes. It's tricky. It's very, very dangerous. Very dangerous. And, you know, of course, there's that, you know, MRSA, the antibiotic-resistant staph infection that they have now, that's really dangerous because, you know, it's a very, very strong form of it, and it's very hard to kill.
Wow.
It's from mostly from people not taking their antibiotics correctly.
You know, and what I've found, to one of the best things to get rid of, like, athlete's foot and shit, which I'm sure you get in an environment like that a lot, is apple cider vinegar. You rub that stuff on it a couple of times and it's gone.
They say you're supposed to pee on your feet too.
Yeah, that works too.
Yeah. I pee on my feet every shower.
Faster though.
Yeah. Yeah, why not? Why not? It's not bad for you.
It's not bad for you.
And it's warm.
Yeah.
It comes from my own body. It's like, what? It doesn't even leave my body. It's one continuous stream. It's not like it leaves my body at all.
It must have been about, what, 2004, 2005. I was living up in the mountains. My phone starts ringing. It was like probably 1:30, 2 o'clock in the fucking morning, right? And I don't get, or I get up and I answer the phone, and it's fucking this dude. It's Joe, and he's on the phone. He's like, "Dude, I'm sick as fuck, man. I gotta be at the studio at like 6 a.m. I feel like shit. What do I do?" And I tell him, drink a couple of glasses of your piss, and it'll make you feel better, right?
Were you giggling with a finger in your butt when you told him this?
So anyway, you know, I go back to bed, right? And then it must have been like 3:30 in the morning. And my phone rings again. It's fucking Joe. This time I don't get up to answer it. I'm just fucking lying in bed, and I hear the answering machine pick up, and it's Joe. He's a dude. I gotta tell you, man, I just drank 2 glasses of my piss, dude. I feel fucking great. I gotta tell you, man, I'm a piss drinker too. Click.
For people who don't know, this is very controversial, obviously, but there's a thing called urine therapy, and the idea behind it is that your body processes waste, and that waste comes out in the form of shit, but that also when water waste comes out, the water that comes out of your body is actually sterile. And that there are some sort of nutrients in it and antibodies when you're trying to get over colds and things of that nature. And so a lot of doctors say it's utter, complete, total horseshit. But people in indigenous cultures, for instance, have been doing that to try to cure diseases and illnesses for, you know, a long time. Obviously, modern medicine is way better than drinking your own piss.
Well, you know, what's interesting, though, is in India, every year, every couple of years, they have a meeting of doctors who meet up to discuss the latest research in urine therapy. I knew somebody who went to the doctor in South America for a skin problem and was told to drink their urine.
Whoa.
So it is, it's not, you know, it's very rare, I think, especially in the United States, but I think in India and China and certain places in South America, it has been adopted.
It's been adopted by modern medicine?
Adopted by freaks.
Yeah.
There's freaks that live everywhere.
Listen, I'll try anything, man. I'll try anything. I've been to zone healers before. I'm like, look, every instinct in my body is telling me this is nonsense, but go ahead. Let me see what's up. You know, let me see what's up. I'll listen to you. I'll listen to your spiel. And maybe even just for material. You know, maybe even I don't believe it. And I just in the interest of this might be something that would be funny to talk about on stage. Right. I'll let you try your voodoo on me. But, you know.
It's like nature makes things look shocking and scary because they're poisonous. Mm-hmm. If you were supposed to drink your pee, it would taste like fucking strawberry.
Doesn't taste bad. It doesn't taste bad at all. That's the thing.
Well, it tastes about what you ate that day. I mean, if you drank a bunch of coffee and soda pop and ate a bunch of crap food, it's probably going to taste pretty fucking bad. But if you eat healthy and take care of yourself, you know, I've done it a few times, you know, when I was sick and something else that we'll talk about later, when I was on mushrooms, and you can recycle your urine, and it's
supposed to put you through Pluto.
Right, and it doesn't taste bad at all, but you know, it's interesting. Is like people that do it for health reasons, they say that it enables them to monitor their body on a regular basis what their intake is, because they immediately taste it and it's like, oh shit, wow, I don't want to eat that anymore. I don't want to do that anymore. It's like it's an automatic alarm system, right?
Yeah, it doesn't taste bad, bro. It's not that bad. I did it on hey, line, you know, go on the radio, it. Rather. And there was a radio station, No Name Show, in San Francisco.
Was it No Name or is it Denver?
No Name. It was No Name. Oh. Yeah, me and No Name drank our own pee. Remember?
Oh, yeah.
He drank, he drank it. He was gagging, and I just threw it down like it was nothing. poor guy was like, ugh! I had drank my own piss like 10 times.
Right.
You know? I mean, I'll do it on a regular basis, but there was a big thing about Lyoto Machida in the UFC, that Lyoto Machida does it, and that his father, who is this karate master, has trained him since he was a young boy. He recycles his urine every morning. Every morning he gets up and drinks his pee. Who the fuck knows, man? It might be bullshit, but if people have been doing it for that long, there might be some merit in it. But
yeah, I've had people come up to me when I've given lectures and say that they've taken it for various, you know, gout or leg problems and pain problems, and after, you know, 4 to 6, 8 weeks, their problems cleared up.
When so they just been, piss all over their gout?
Isn't no, gout they would, like they would drink, overweight they issue? Would drink like a small amount, like a half a cup every morning, fresh, you know?
Really?
I would try it once, but I would definitely make sure I ate a bunch of berries and like I would just make it good. I would cook it good. I'd be a good chef, you know.
Yeah, I don't recommend coffee before you do it. That's oh, about see, I'm the fucked. Worst thing you can
really?
Do.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I had asparagus coffee? And coffee for breakfast this morning.
It's just, you know,
there was a guy who used to post on the message board until he got too creepy and someone banned him. Because he was just, I forget what his deal was, but fuck he weird. Would he would get these girls that like didn't have any money, and he would take care of them for a little while, and eventually do like a bunch of dirty shit to them. Like he was into and write stories about this. And one of the things he would do is make his loads taste as disgusting as possible. So he would talk about the asparagus coffee loads that he would shoot down these girls' throats. I don't remember honestly, but I remember he made a lot of people angry because they were like, "Well, if this guy's telling the truth, he's a real piece of shit as a human being." Wow. And if he's just trolling, like, stop.
Yeah.
You know, stop making up some fucking stories.
I would probably say it's trolling, but you never know.
Who knows, man? I mean, most likely, yeah, most likely trolling. But either way, it was really good writing. It was compelling. Like, I didn't like him in his writing. I didn't like who he was, but it was very compelling. I was like, this is interesting. It's like, it's obviously very good and very well written, because the idea behind it is kind of gross to me, that you would like go out of your way to take some poor woman who doesn't know what to do with her life and she's really broke, and you force her into, you know, doing weird shit for you because, you know, that's how you get off, and then you write about it. You know, like, that's like you're victimizing people. And why are you doing that? But not knowing whether or not it was true or not true. You know, and choosing to look at it from the point of view, like, maybe it's just fiction. Maybe this guy's just into the mind of a creep. You know, who knows? Who knows? But it's really well written. But he was all into just gross loads. There's apparently a recipe. Joe Diaz will tell you how to make it come out like shotguns.
That's
like gunpowder.
I stay at this horrible hotel. Last night we were in Vegas, and I didn't know it was a hotel that's next to a strip club that we did a show at. And I think the guy that owns the strip club owns the hotel, and it's one of those boutique hotels where you walk in, there's nice paintings everywhere, like every room was a different theme of painting. And really cool. But after 6 o'clock, it turns into a nightclub that's open till like 8 a.m. And it's just the gay people, the ravers.
6 a.m.?
8 a.m. It goes about
8 a.m. No, but what time does it start?
6 p.m.? 6 p.m. So we got back to the hotel, and there was like, you know, lines of people getting in the hotel and the red rope, and they're like, you have to wait in line. I'm like, no, we're staying here. And they're like, oh, go through. We go in, the whole lobby is a rave. I'm like, what the fuck is this place? So we go upstairs, and then I'm looking out the window, and it was one of those views where it's like you're just looking at air conditioning units, like it's the roof, but there's just people that were sneaking in through like this air conditioning unit and going up there and doing like crazy drugs and having sex right outside your window. And then I'm thinking, wow.
Sneaking in through the air conditioning unit, what do you mean?
There like was
a door or something?
Yeah, there was a door going through the floor, and they were climbing out. And like all these people were hanging out on the roof outside of our window. It was fucked up. And then I'm looking and I'm like, these beds are probably just made for having sex with hookers and like strippers that are coming from the strip club, you know? And so there's that red pillow that was on the bed. It was like one of those fashion pillows that you throw on the ground. You don't really sleep on.
Right.
But there's this cum all over it, dude.
Oh, God.
And then the channels, the TV, because we were on shrooms, so we were like just trying to watch TV, and you can't hear anything except, you know, like whole time. We turned on the TV, and it was just scrambled porn. Like, you straight on anal sex pops up on your TV, and you're like, what the fuck?
Wait a minute, scrambled? Was it scrambled or not scrambled?
It was channels were porn, and then tons of scrambled porn mixed in. Like, you would go to a channel, it was just like, what is going on in that? And then it would be like NBC, and then suddenly a scrambled porn channel. Fucking weird. Then all the lights just turned off.
Explain that. It was porn, and then it would go to NBC.
Yeah, like the channels were mixed up with porn, and then like scrambled porn.
So whatever channel you would watch porn would just invade the channel.
No. Like you turn to NBC and you turn to the next channel, it'll be a guy getting his asshole licked by a girl.
Okay, so there's not porn on NBC.
No.
Okay, then that's what it sounded like.
You remember scrambled porn back in the day where it's just a bunch of static?
Yeah. If you go to a hotel room and they would have like pay-per-view channels, and you could click on it and you wouldn't be able to see anything.
Right, there was tons of that. It was so weird. And then the lights didn't turn on and off. They turned on and off when you wanted to. And they were like, yeah, this is an eco-friendly hotel where you put your key in and it controls the air conditioning and the lights, which means the air conditioning didn't work and all the lights were just flashing on and off whenever they wanted to. And then the pool area, topless pool area, but like 90% of the girls where you were like, holy shit, I have hairier chest than her. Or, I mean, she has a hairier chest than me. It was fucking the worst hotel in the history of hotels. But it was 4th of July. Dude,
that's not the worst hotel. You got out alive. There's some hotels in Russia where you wake up with stitches where your liver used to be.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
You do hear stories sounds like about your hotel shit like sucks. That over in Europe.
It was crazy. It was one of those hotels where some of the fashion of the room was these like little mirrors that were placed everywhere on the wall, and you're sitting there thinking, I wonder if there's cameras underneath all those mirrors. You know, like it seemed that sketchy. Like, what the fuck
could
is
be
it?
Very easily.
Exactly.
Very easily.
If it's owned by that strip club too.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Woo. Remember that one guy? There was a guy who got caught, and he was some really, really famous rich guy. Not a famous rich guy, but a famous rich guy's son. I don't remember the guy's name. But anyway, they found all these fucking cameras in his house. Like, this guy had his house like set up as basically like a little film studio, and everything was hidden cameras. And just hundreds of videos of him just with these drugged up chicks. Yeah. They would come in stumbling in, not knowing what the fuck. You know, he put something in their drink or something, and then he was filming all of it. Do you remember that story?
Yeah, I do.
I haven't combined two stories, have I?
I don't know. I remember that, though. Like, he found shit. Like, his phones were all tapped. There was cameras in everywhere, like in his lights and everything.
No. This guy did it on purpose. He set up his room, his bedroom, like that. Oh. And then they suspected him of drugging chicks.
I was thinking of a story where a guy found out that his whole house was bugged, and he thinks it was the government. It was from like 3 years ago. I can't remember. Who cares?
Well, there was that Hemingway thing that just came out. You know, Hemingway thought that the government was following him. And it turns out they were. They were tapping his phones. They were following him. So he was right. And it was like what they say, you know, some people say the last straw that drove Hemingway to commit suicide. And that he was, people thought he was just paranoid. But in fact, the government really was watching him. Hmm. Like, why the fuck would you be watching a writer? You know, like, what do you know, the idea, I guess, is that he was too close to the communists or something like that because he was always in Cuba. Well, you know, like, he was going to fucking overthrow the government or something, just being a badass, being Hemingway.
Yeah, you know, there was so much intelligence going on different levels. You had this whole dialectic between communism and capitalism on one level being steered by bankers higher up, but... All of this stuff, you know, that goes into a lot of my current research right now. In fact, I've got Council on Foreign Relations documents sitting right here next to me from them talking about mushrooms and stuff like that, you know, the key players in the Council on Foreign Relations.
Yeah, you would have to.
These people are into crazy stuff on so many levels, you know.
Yeah, and you would have
to. Messing up people's heads and, you know, the CIA messing with people's heads, MK Ultra. They've been spying on people and messing with people forever.
Yeah, of course. And you would have to think that anyone with any level of intelligence who is in any position of power would want to know about chemicals that change people's minds. You'd want to know about it. You know, you wouldn't just ignore it. You wouldn't just say, oh, we need to make this illegal. They would start looking into some things. There's no way they haven't. They would be crazy not to.
Well, interestingly, what I've found out recently is that there was this exclusive club that a lot of these elitists and bankers and intelligence people belong to. And they would share the information on psychedelics at the highest levels. I mean, pretty much everybody at the highest levels from the 1940s through the 60s knew what was going on about psychedelics on every level before the public did. And
yeah, I would think they'd have to. I don't know how you could be in any position of power and not be aware of something that powerful, something that's, you know, like the whole movement of the 60s, and whether people want to wrap their head around it or not, that was all drugs. That whole, you know, that whole acid culture that was coming out of San Francisco, that whole summer of love, that generational gap, that huge leap between the 1950s and 1960s, that was all drugs, man. That was all drugs. It was all people smoking pot and people doing heroin and people, you know, getting high on mushrooms and acid and feeling things that they had never felt before and being able to express things in a way they had never felt before. And the disenfranchised, every fucking generation feels disenfranchised, man. There's no getting around that. It's impossible to get around it. Everybody wants to escape from their fucking parents' clutches. Everybody wants to escape from the designs of the system that they've been thrust into. You know, you've been born into this fucking system that you have to participate in without you having any say in it whatsoever. Just boom. Every fucking single generation feels like that.
Right.
But that generation got a hold of some shit.
Well, you know,
before those laws.
And the interesting thing, you know, and here, I've got literally a stack of stuff right here. This is all Council on Foreign Relations.
No way we're
going to
go through that in a podcast, mister.
Yeah, oh, well, I'm just showing you guys. We're not going to go through it, but there's some serious stuff right here that shows how top members of U.S. intelligence like Alan Dulles, John Foster Dulles, bankers like Frank Altschulz, and other guys like Walter Lippmann, all of these intelligence people as well, were at the highest levels involved in all of the psychedelics.
I have
all
no idea.
All of these guys knew about
it. I have no idea who any of those people.
Alan Dulles was
one
of the heads of the CIA. Any conspiracy theorists out there will know who Alan Dulles is.
Okay, I have no idea who any of those people are, but I do think that if I was like a total like internet conspiracy geek and he just hit me with all those names in a row, I would have the uber obscure name guy hard on right now.
Right.
And wiki those right now.
Wiki the fuck out of those guys.
I was thinking about all those documents. Don't they have them like in PDF form now? You can just have them like, I have all these documents on my phone.
This little thing right here is 8 gigs. And the only reason why it's 8 gigs is because the 16 gig ones, for some reason, they don't process well with our little MP3 recorder.
Yep.
We don't need your crazy papers, your stacks of nonsense. The problem with that is we don't believe it unless it's on paper, man. If it's digital, you can do anything digital shit. You can do anything to paper shit, too.
Yeah.
So the age of knowing what the fuck anything is over. You know? Those days are done, man. You're not going to know what's real and what's not real anymore. It's too tricky. There's too many pictures of Megan Fox getting
people
fucked.
People don't have a systematic method of figuring shit out anymore. That's the big problem.
That is a problem, but the other problem is the ability to manipulate information and matter. It's just too
if you have a systematic method of filtering it, then you know how to spot bullshit right away. You know, it's
yeah, maybe.
There is a way to do it, actually.
There's experience and instincts too, you know. There's certain times where you look at something. Brian's pretty good at spotting internet memes that are bullshit.
Right.
You're pretty good at that. You nail them. You out of all the people that I know, you probably have the highest success rate for nailing internet memes.
I think I'm pretty good with it in life too. Just meeting people, judging people. I overthink everything and try to like play out all these different scenarios.
Yeah. Have you guys ever studied logical fallacies?
No,
shit gets really good because it shows you exactly how people lie, and then it enables you name the exact lie that they're using, so it gives you explicit knowledge. So, like, if somebody uses an ad hominem or an attack on the man, right? Let's say you say something, you make a claim, and they say, oh, well, Brian's a fag. I don't want to listen to anything he says. Well, then you know, oh, well, that's an ad hominem. He didn't deal with the information that Brian presented. He attacked Brian instead.
That's Internet 101, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's all these different fallacies. So when you can name them, though, it totally enables you how to know when somebody's lying to you.
Yeah,
and so when you can understand that,
See, now I have like this energy thing where I think it's, I really think it's mushrooms or psychedelics that's kind of enhanced this, that I could actually look at people and kind of hear them talk and look at their eyes and face and not actually study it, just that overall I could feel they're kind of like an energy almost. Like I can see if this person's a little dark in places and kind of like, it's weird.
It's true, but there are certain people that you're not going to feel.
Like, yeah,
sociopaths.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a sociopath snip into your circle? You didn't realize he was a sociopath until, like, after a while, you're like, whoa, what the fuck is going on? You know, Eddie Bravo and I knew a dude who killed a guy.
Yeah, I haven't had that.
Do you know that story?
No, what happened?
There was a guy, he would say his name was Raphael Torre, but that wasn't his real name. His real name was something else. He, like, invented this name and pretended he was a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt and made his way into the mixed martial arts community as a total scam artist. And Eddie had disowned him for lying about jiu-jitsu because Eddie found out that he lied about being a black belt and he wasn't really a black belt at all. So Eddie like stopped hanging out with him because he's like, this guy's crazy. He's just making things up. Like he had rolled him a couple times and tapped him out really easy. But then he thought maybe the guy was like being respectful and not trying to roll too hard. But then he realized after a while, like, oh, no, this guy's terrible. Like he doesn't know any jiu-jitsu. He's not a black belt. This is crazy. Anyway, time goes on. That guy killed a guy. And he was dating this guy's wife and lured this guy back to his dojo, apparently, and choked the guy to death. Yeah. Killed. Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. That's deep shit. Killed the guy and then was driving around the dude's car and shit. So I knew that guy, man. I hung out with that guy. I hung out with that guy and his wife.
Wow.
Yeah. They were over at Eddie's place.
And you had no feeling at all?
Dude, I did not have any feeling of danger, any feeling that he was a bad guy. He seemed like just a friendly dude. He hadn't killed anybody yet, I don't think. I mean, yeah. That maybe did it earlier and got away with it. I don't think. Maybe the pussy was so good. Maybe the pussy was so good. Maybe it was just so good, he just couldn't help it. I don't know. I doubt it. But, I mean, he was already getting it. I don't get the killing part.
That's weird.
Yeah, how about you just move to Florida together or something crazy? You don't have to fucking kill that guy, man.
Go halfsies on Costco memberships.
Yeah, don't be crazy. But I think... I like to think that I have the ability to spot bullshit, and I think I'm pretty good at it. But that guy troubles me. That guy troubles me. The idea that you know that I ran into that guy and had no idea that he was capable of murder. Because I've met some other people, and if you asked me if they're capable of murder, I'd say, yeah, probably.
What? This is funny because, like, you know how Duncan is. Would you ever think that Duncan could be one of those guys that go off and go crazy and murder people?
Duncan could murder somebody if the position was correct.
Because I was looking at if
I everybody had to choose, could if you yeah, thought that your life was in danger.
Yeah.
If you thought, you know, that everybody could if you were pushed to a position where you felt like you had to.
I love Duncan to death, but he's the thoughts that he has, and especially when he was in that satanic mode, I was like, really? Is he like, I always wondered.
Well, he's just experimental. You know, when he was into Satanism, he was just being experimental. He wasn't really like, I'm gonna fucking worship Satan. He was like, I think it's fascinating that everybody misunderstands this, and what it really is they're saying they want to be hedonistic. You know, they want to, you know, indulge in pleasures and overeat and have sex and sleep till noon. Like that's like Satanism to them. That's like expressing themselves in the most ridiculous and outrageous and self-serving way possible, as opposed to this idea of, you know, the pious Christian who's trying to serve the Holy Father.
Well, you have his fascination with serial killers too, which is
me.
Another level to Satanism, though. You should check out Mark Passio's work. Those interested, he goes into some deep stuff. He used to be a priest of the Church of Satan.
Duncan, like all artists, toys with madness.
Yeah.
You know, everybody does.
He does it to the most that I know. Yes. That's why I would think that.
I agree. He gets deep. He wants to, well, he's very experimental with his thought processes. It's one of the reasons why his comedy's so funny. And that, you know, his sense of the world. This is very unique. I love it. It's a very fascinating take. But it's a couple steps away from crazy, bro.
Yeah, you
know?
I love him,
it really is. And as is mine, you know, I am guilty as charged. You know, when people say, hey, what about you, man? I'm like, dude, you're never going to get out of me that I think in any way, shape, or form that I'm some sort of a perfect person. I'm constantly fucking up left and right, trying to patch up mistakes, trying to fucking be on the straight and narrow all the time. But I'm crazy too. I know I am. I know, given the right circumstances, the right situation, I could go fucking completely insane. And I think a lot of artists are in that same situation. You know, it's like you know, if everything's going smooth in your life, you don't even know yourself. You don't know what you're capable of. It's when the shit gets ugly that you find out what you're really capable of. You know, like Donner parties start type shit, right, where people freeze and you got to eat them because you don't want to starve to death. You'd be the
first.
I'll fucking eat somebody, bro.
I'm getting that ass.
I'll snap right
Joey Diaz's ass is mine.
I'll go right over to the dark side. Joey Diaz will cook up well over some burning sticks because he's got so much fat in his meat.
He would, yeah, that would be, he'll be delicious. That'd be like picanha.
You might be the best. You're like a veal.
I don't know.
You're like a chubby veal.
I'm very hairy. I think I would have a lot of root in
me. So's a pig, bro. They're delicious once you burn that hair off. Come on, son.
Come on, son. I'm black. Come on,
son. Don't get crazy. So, Jan, you wrote two books on psychedelics and the relationship to Christianity. You've got the first one that you wrote was The Pharmacratic Inquisition.
Well, that was the DVD I did, Pharmacratic Inquisition.
Pharmacratic.
Pharmacratic.
The quack in there.
Can I see that?
Yeah.
Is this Astrotheology and Shamanism was
that
the
was the
one.
Book, right? Right. So the Pharmacratic Inquisition was what you were going to call it at one point in time, and then you decided to just do it as a lecture series.
Right. Well, you know, Astrotheology and Shamanism describe more of what the book is about, which is the, well, we publish ancient primary texts about ancient sun and star worship and Christianity, and I've also published more recently ancient primary texts on Christians using mushrooms as well, which is what my second book is about.
That's the Holy Mushroom?
That's the Holy Mushroom, Evidence of Mushrooms in Judeo-Christianity. But in that book, I published the first ancient primary text of mushroom use by Christians, and it was a document called the Epistle to the Renegade Bishops, which is a canonized text for the Orthodox Church.
You know what I love about Jan, before you go any further? I met Jan years ago. I mean, how long ago have I known you?
At least 8 years.
And when I met Jan years ago, he was just this really cool guy. I met you over Jack Harris' house, right?
Right. We met at Jack's.
Yeah, we went to Jack Harris' house, and Jan was just this really cool guy who was very smart and had a lot of information. But there's a lot of those guys, you know, and they'll tell you things. They'll tell you stuff about this, and did you know that the 15th president, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, they're fascinating to talk to. But you actually wrote fucking books. You know what I'm saying? Like, my man wrote some real ass books, you know, with like references and, you know, backed
color
up
photos.
He's got a glossary in this bitch. You know, there's photographs. The color photos are fucking awesome because it's like, at a certain point in time, it becomes undeniable. And that shirt, the shirt that you have on, that is a cardinal.
Anybody can see that?
It shows the colors of a cardinal and how the cardinals, well, you know, the ancient Catholic Church period, the ancient Christianity, was they were obsessed with that mushroom.
Let
that
me see Amanita that other
muscaria
book.
Mushroom.
Oh, you got it over there. Hold up the front cover of the Holy Mushroom book.
It's hard to see because this is a really old painting, and it's when you're looking at it here.
Let me tell them what it is though. On the right side of the window there, up above, is baby Jesus riding on the back of Saint Christopher, and baby Jesus is in the shape of a mushroom, and we've even had a professor of mycology identify the exact type of mushroom that Jesus is depicted as there. And that's from Montferrand-du-Perigord, France, from the 13th century, from a chapel there.
And there's a lot of mushrooms on this fucking wall.
So most artists are drug addicts, so wouldn't you think just back then that artist that did it was just like, man, I'd like to eat some mushrooms, and I got hired to do this church shit.
That's a good point.
You know, so.
They're like, what is with the mushroom? Dude, it looks bitchin'.
Well, you know, if you think about it.
Yeah, he probably got in a lot of trouble for that. You probably got stoned and got...
A lot of people are probably like, what the fuck? Christians using mushrooms? What's that about, you know?
Imagine if this whole Christian mushroom connection was really just a bunch of taggers.
Yeah. Seriously.
jokesters who were artists.
We actually do have several primary texts about it. In fact, there's one text found in the Jewish Kabbalah in the Book of Zohar that specifically discusses the mushroom, the red mushroom, or the red fungus, actually. And like I said, the Christian text, the Epistle of the Renegade Bishops, there's a Muslim text from the 7th century that discusses manna being a type of mushroom.
And manna was referred to in other texts as well, and soma was referred to in the Hindu text, and that was also thought to be possibly related too, right?
Right, and there is an argument right now going on between academics if the manna... That where it says that it's a mushroom in this Muslim Mishkat text, if it's talking about a truffle or a psychedelic mushroom, and the word there that they use, it, you know, it describes the word sight, and the word sight that is written in the original text can be spiritual or visual sight. So there, the debate is whether or not this truffle is a mushroom or a truffle type mushroom. So, You know, but either way, mana appears to have been a type of mushroom. But, you know, I have to give Gianmarco Allegro credit. I am the publisher of the 40th anniversary edition of his book, and this book here was actually a really famous book in the it came out in 1970. Yeah,
we've talked about this many times on the show.
Right, I republished that
book. Well, this is the new version that Jan has republished.
I republished it.
Yeah,
I work with John Allegro's family.
I've got two copies of the old original one.
Yeah, I've got a couple online.
I wanted to buy them because I knew they were out of print and they were so cool. Right. It was a original.
Yeah, the new version has a 35-page addendum by Professor Carl Rock from Boston University, who has come out publicly endorsing Allegro's work. You know, and then plus, like I said, let's explain this before we go any further
because there's a lot of people who are uninitiated.
All right.
Gianmarco Allegro worked for the people that were deciphering the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Well, he was one of the original eight members of the Dead Sea Scrolls team to translate the Dead Sea Scrolls. They contacted Oxford University. He was studying under for his doctorate in philology there in Asiatic languages, which that part of the Middle East is considered Asia. And somebody contacted the university and asked them to send their best, so they recommended John Allegro go. And so he worked to translate the Dead Sea Scrolls from 1953 until 1968. He was actually the only member of the Dead Sea Scrolls team to ever release any information about the Dead Sea Scrolls to the public during that period from like 1953 until 1991. And the other members of the team sat on their information for years. And after a huge blow up, the Huntington Library in about 1990-91, which is over by Pasadena, they finally released all of their photographs in their possession of the Dead Sea Scrolls, which finally allowed other scholars to get their hands on them and translate them. But John Allegro, up until that point, was the only one that was fighting against the rest of the team to put information out. And, of course, they attacked him. If you go to Dead Sea Scrolls displays today, they almost completely omit him from any mention of the Dead Sea Scrolls. But he was really the key player to get it out to the public. And so what happened was in the 1950s, Professor John Ramsbottom from the London Botanical Museum published a book suggesting that Adam and Eve in the tree of knowledge was a mushroom, and he showed a fresco from France that's called the Plain Crow fresco.
It's
very
online.
Famous.
So how can people find it? What is it called?
The Plain Crow fresco. It's in the book there.
Spell
it's
that
image
though?
Number here.
Because it's a fascinating image. I've seen it 100 times.
Let me see that. Sure. Just hold up the back of the book there, actually.
Well, the problem is that most people are not going to see this. Most people are going to get this on Sirius Satellite Radio or on iTunes.
Yeah, but it's P L
MP3 form.
A-I-N
for your Zune.
C-O-U-R-A ULT.
Say that again, bro. I was talking out of you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
PLAINCOURAULT.
And let me check that again. The painting is amazing. If you haven't seen it before, and again, Brian could be right. It could be some crazy artist who's really into mushrooms.
Well, most artists are into, you know, psychedelics. That's why they're painting.
I've never heard that point before.
It's true, right?
It's a very good point.
I know every artist and every author like to do drugs. So like they're taking these scrolls, or these guys probably did a lot of drugs, and they're throwing mushrooms in also. Like that, you were talking about that maize or whatever it's called, the maize mushroom. Earlier, what was the mushroom that you were calling earlier? You said it was from the old Hebrew text. When you translate it, they said
from the Mishkat.
Yeah, so maybe the author of of that was on mushrooms. He's like, yeah, I'm gonna throw some mushrooms in here because I like to eat mushrooms too. Throw it in.
Well, you know, there's if you look at in my Holy Mushroom book, I published 43 images or paintings that go from Russia to England, and it shows a pretty widespread use from the early first millennium all the way through the late 1800s. So
imagine if God hired someone to write the Bible,
right?
And as the dude's writing, he just throws some mushroom shit.
Fuck yeah! Of course he's going to tag the Bible if God. God paying
while God's making
him God's write busy. It. He has other things except looking through deciphering mushrooms.
Back to this Gianmarco Allegro thing. So Gianmarco Allegro worked on the Dead Sea Scrolls for 14, 15 years,
right.
Correct? He comes to the conclusion with this book that you are republishing, The Sacred Mushroom and the Cross.
Right.
And if you allow me, if tell me if this is correct, his conclusion is that all of Christianity is a gigantic misunderstanding.
What it really
is about is the fertility cults and the consumption of psychedelic mushrooms.
Right.
And that's the whole religion.
And he argues that Jesus himself was an anthropomorphism or a metaphor for the mushroom, for the entheogenic experience itself, not a physical person. And in fact, theologists and religious experts still today are debate constantly whether or not Jesus and these characters were historical. There's a lot of evidence to suggest that they are in fact myths, just like Zeus or any of the Greek gods or any of the Hindu gods or any other gods. But when you live in your own religion and you have your own beliefs, you tend to take them on as real historical characters. But as I showed in my first book, Astrotheology and Shamanism, when you compare all of these different religions that hold beliefs like sun worship and moon worship and these things, as well as psychedelics, and they all start to tie together, when you look at their similarities through fertility rituals, through psychedelic use, and through sun and star and moon worship. Like I said earlier, I published a 4th century text from Father Epiphanius where he's sitting there talking about how the birth of Jesus coincides exactly with the birth of the sun and everything. And then he says, but all of those other pagan religions, they're not the real one. We're the real one. And his text was actually censored for 1,000 years by the church until another older copy of it was later found and published in the 1850s. So they, the church literally tried to suppress one of their own guy's texts talking about this stuff.
Well, I would assume that if you look at all this religious artwork that has all these mushroom symbols in them, and we're talking about doorway openings, right? Like the shape of doorway openings. And Jack Herer, when he was about to write the
sure, why don't book, you open up Astrotheology and Shamanism and show him some of the doorways?
Well, we can't. Let's stick to just audio because, like I said, the vast majority of the people that get this podcast get it just.
That's right. All right.
But anyway, my point was, do you think that how it went down was that all of this knowledge and information about psychedelics was kept from the common person? Was it like only with the powers of the church? Was it
right? Well, it was kept for the elite, those who basically had the knowledge of the trivium and quadrivium or had studied the seven liberal arts. They were considered better than the masses or the dead, as they're also known, or the profane, right? And so the elites and the educated would hold this information for themselves, the trivium, the quadrivium, the psychedelics, the history of philosophy. There's also that a lot of people don't know about is there was this ancient conversation. It's 2,500 years old. It's still going on. And it's called, it's called The Great Conversation, but it's found in a series of books called The Great Books of the Western World. And leading thinkers and leading experts, every generation add on to this great conversation, and it's still going on today. It goes all the way from Socrates to today. And right now it's like 54 or 59 volumes or something like that. It's like a 10-year undertaking, but any real expert in the ancient knowledge or in philosophy or anything like that has studied this great conversation or has participated in it. And so there's all of these different levels of knowledge. The trivium and quadrivium is the foundation to the great books of the Western world. So you have to have a firm understanding of this information. And all of this is related to the religions as well. But just to give a very quick synopsis, the trivium, specifically in this order, is grammar, logic, and rhetoric. And that teaches you how to think and how to learn, not what to think. And then the quadrivium is math, geometry, music, and astronomy, specifically in that order. Geometry is number in space, music is number in time, and astronomy is number in music and time. And then so when you have this foundation...
Astronomy is number in music and time?
Number in space and time. Music is number in time. Astronomy is number in space and time.
Okay. You said so, music and time.
Sorry about
that.
This
motherfucker is higher than me.
I need a calculator.
But what they do is, up until the 1850s, everybody in their schooling was taught the trivium and quadrivium. So then if you wanted to go onto this higher level of education in the great books of the Western world, you could participate. But all of the old great thinkers were in on it, basically.
So all the old great thinkers were in on mushrooms, but no one.
Well, not necessarily in on the mushrooms. They were in on the great conversation. But there are aspects, you know, in my research and in some of these documents here, through some of the clubs, it's very clear that many members of the elite, like, let's say, the owner of Time Life magazine, the head of the CIA, rich financiers like Oppenheimer or Walter Lippmann or Frank Asholt, these guys...
Geek boner right now.
Right?
Here it comes.
All of these guys were in on this top knowledge, and they were sharing this information at the top levels. I can actually, you know, I have documentation...
He has the documents.
Actually, these are from university, like from the CFR archives at Princeton University and things like that. So I can show you from their own archives.
So in their own archives, they talk about mushrooms. They talk about psychedelic drugs.
Well,
the
key players involved, like especially Gordon Wasson. Gordon Wasson was involved in all levels of U.S. intelligence. And he is the guy who in 1957 brought out the story about magic mushrooms in Life magazine.
Life magazine, right.
Right. And,
very famous article.
Right. So
really eye-opening.
Gordon Wasson was a chairman for the Council on Foreign Relations, right? Henry Luce at Time Life magazine, he was Skull and Bones, but he was also working with Gordon Wasson at CFR.
This is what I wanted to avoid. Because now, this is whenever I talk to Jan, he has to go so deep with all this conspiracy type shit. And I'm sure it's all real.
Well,
I'm sure it's all real. I shouldn't say conspiracy. He conspired. They conspired to do something and disappear.
Well, I have
people.
The documents that I show that they were together.
That's not interesting to me. What's interesting to me is how this all
what
got
about those
started
in your audience
in the first
might
place.
Be. Dun, dun, dun.
Dude,
that's why you need to
get
Twitter.
You go too far. You go too far down to this guy, that guy. I got to take notes on names.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Like, honestly, to me, it's like you start saying all these names and stuff, and I'm so confused because I don't know any of these
trust
names.
Trust me.
Or
take it from an entertainer who knows his audience.
If
this
you draw
is
me
the
a picture,
wrong way to go with this subject.
Draw me a picture.
Because it's a fascinating subject. The idea that all religious experiences come from psychedelic experiences, it totally, completely makes sense. The connection between this Amanita muscaria mushroom, the relationship that it has to Christmas trees, you know, that it has a mycorrhizal relationship with the Christmas tree and it grows under them, you know, and that all these things, no one knows about this. This is all, for some reason, has been kept out of public school systems, kept out of universities. Nobody's talking
about
this stuff.
It's all being kept from, you know, the public education system isn't designed to make you intelligent, free your mind. It's designed to make you a good soldier or factory.
Right, but but forget about that. Is there a single course in any accredited university anywhere in the world where they go into depth about the history of psychedelic use?
I would say yes. There
really?
Are a few. You know, and anthropology especially, but Professor Tom Roberts at the University of Illinois has been teaching the oldest running psychedelics course since the 1980s.
And what does he talk about?
Is
it basically about psychedelic research?
He's also a major archiver of psychedelic information and things like that.
Does he go into depth about like the history of its use, like John Marco Allegro type
Right, shit? Yeah, and people are allowed to, you know, study, you know, he allows his people in his class to choose a book in the whole, you know, there's like 400 or 500 books on psychedelic studies on from all different directions out there, and he lets them go out and research these and write reports on them and things like that as part of the class. So
that's interesting. I wonder if he gets talked to by anybody at any point in time, you know, and they have to make sure that he doesn't encourage the use of these and that it has to be discussed.
Who knows?
In a very
I'm sure that
way.
they make it.
Wouldn't you think?
Obvious. But, you know, I interviewed him on my podcast. For those who don't know, GnosticMedia.com. But
Gnostic is G-N.
GnosticMedia.com. But he was very open about his own psychedelic use on my show.
Really?
I've interviewed more than 60 doctors and professors and leading experts in psychedelic studies on my show, from Stan Grof, who's one of the leading expert on LSD, and a bunch of other people, and they're very straightforward about their own personal use. I think there's been one doctor that I've had on, Deborah Mash at the University of Miami, who said she's never tried the drugs that she researches.
That's interesting. Strassman's kind of, he doesn't really talk about it that much, does he?
Not too much, but, you know, he and I have talked about it a little bit on the side before, but he's not too public about anything.
Well, his if you don't know, Strassman is the guy who wrote the book DMT, The Spirit Molecule, which is an amazing book. One of the more recent, probably the most recent study of psychedelic drugs that was approved by the federal government, and he shot these people up with DMT, and they had these fucking incredible visions and incredible stories, like really intense book, and very, very fascinating. But he didn't talk about it too much. But he did tell me about these crazy people that have a loophole in New Mexico, and they just got away with doing this. Apparently, they just won during the Supreme with the Supreme Court. You know the people I'm talking about.
No.
The church that they drink that ayahuasca.
Ayahuasca.
It's not. They call it ayahuasca though. You know, but it is a DMT, an orally active DMT.
Oh, right. Well, you know, it's ayahuasca. Ayahuasca. There's a few different names for it, but they're
same thing.
DMT, same thing.
Would you recommend that?
Was it Santo Daime? Was it?
I think that's it. I think that's the name of it. And they wear uniforms, and they all like take. Like super powerful ayahuasca and then sing songs about Jesus.
Right. Yeah. The Santo Daime Church, they won the right to practice up in Oregon about 2 years ago. And the Uno de Vegetal is another ayahuasca church that operates in the United States, and they've had approval for about 5 or 10 years.
How incredible is that?
Right. It's have the Native American Church. You have the Oklavueha Native American Church. The Oklavueha Native American Church is the only Native American church that allows non-natives to practice, and they practice peyote, mushrooms. They pretty much do the whole thing there, yeah.
And non-natives are allowed?
Non-natives are allowed in the Oklavueha branch.
And where's that at?
And that's run by James Warren Flying Eagle Mooney.
Flying Eagle, sir. If you're out there, holla at your boy. Let's make something happen. I'm talking about like a yearly thing. Holla at your boy. We could do it legal. Legal,
right.
Peyote, yeah, and but mushroom yeah, trips you know, these, in the desert.
You know, and when you think about it, almost all religions, if you go back far enough, they were using psychedelics. It wasn't just the Native Americans or the South Americans who used, you know, ayahuasca or, you know, it wasn't just brown cultures. It was the white cultures too, you know, and in Genesis, Rachel and Leah are arguing over who gets the mandrakes to have sex with Rachel's husband, right?
What so is a this mandrake?
Mandrake is a psychedelic as well as an aphrodisiac. It's in the scopolamine family.
What's Brian, a Genesis?
Right, you just found your drug.
Right, you know, in the Song of Solomon, in the Song of Solomon, it discusses mandrake there as well, and there's been a number of people, myself, Jack Hare, that we both knew, and Clark Heinrich have all argued that the entire story in Song of Solomon is actually a basically a psychedelic story. If you look at it, if the characters are put in context of drugs and red mushrooms with white spots and things, suddenly the story makes a lot more sense.
Here's an example, and it is on the same subject, although it doesn't feel that it would be, of you know how we were talking earlier about being able to feel if someone's weird. Feel someone's crazy. The first time I was introduced to this subject was the first time I met Jan. I met Jan over at Jack Harris' place, and Jack Harris was showing me all these photos, which I hope are still around. I hope somebody got those. He had these incredible photos of artwork where it showed naked people under
the
a mushroom
and stuff like that.
They were under a mushroom. They had like a transparent mushroom, and they were naked in ecstasy dancing under the mushroom, clearly showing these people under the effect of this psychedelic drug. And so it's me, and it's Jan, and it's Jack, and it's Jack's friend. And man, Jack's friend, all my alarms are going off. I'm like, this guy is just fucking weird, man. I'm like, this guy is creeping me out.
Yeah,
like,
you know.
I don't like the way he talks. I don't like the way he interacts with me. I'm uncomfortable when he gets close to me. I'm like, how are these people around this guy? I'm like, this guy's just setting off.
And I'm just not picking up any of this. And you know, what's funny is like, it must have been like 6 months later, I called Joe up. I'm driving down the freeway one day, and I called Joe up, and I'm like, dude, you know that guy that was at Jack's house that day? I was all, he just got busted, and he's all... And then Joe interrupts me and he said, he was a pedophile. And I went, oh my fucking God, how did you know? And he's all, I just knew, dude. Right? The guy got arrested for guy got arrested for pedophilia and killed himself in jail.
Wow.
Or supposedly.
Oh no, he did, dude. He set up this whole little ritual and and he sent a letter to my friend about the whole ritual that he was doing. I mean, it was all like, you know, timed with the eclipse and all this shit, and with the Pope, with Pope John Paul's burial. It was like April 8th, 2005, or some shit.
I don't know, man. I think he was, I don't know. I just knew. I knew I wanted to kill him. When you're around certain people and you want to kill them, that's not good. Like when you feel like, you just feel like this is a dangerous animal that's near me. Like, why am I allowing this thing to be near me? I don't claim to be perfect at this. Like that Raphael Torre guy totally slipped through my radar, mostly because I was stoned as fuck when I was hanging around with him.
Right.
Maybe it was that. Maybe I was just too you know, well, but we were stoned as
fuck that day at Jack Harris' house of all places. Yeah, you know,
good point. Whatever it was,
the father of the hip movement.
He just set me off. Yeah, it was so uncomfortable because it was the first time I was meeting Jack, and it was really like, you know, if you don't know who Jack Harris is, Jack Harris wrote the book. The Emperor was, thank you, rest in peace, Jack. He wrote a book called The Emperor Wears No Clothes, and it's a brilliant book where it really breaks down everything that the whole history of hemp and marijuana,
medical marijuana.
And actually, our friend Todd McCormick has re-released this, and it's out now. Right. They put a new edition.
Yeah, you know, do you guys have a new edition? I haven't even Todd moved up north, and I haven't gotten a new copy.
I don't have a new one. I have the old one, but it's in my library, which is on the other side of the house.
I've got like 12 autographed copies from every edition from Jack at home.
Yeah. He was a guy who, it's a really fascinating story. He was a Goldwater Republican, a real man's man. He was in the military, and this guy gets divorced, and he meets some woman, and, you know, he wants to get laid, so he gets high with her. And now, all of a sudden, he, like, realizes the benefits of marijuana, and then he gets angry and realizes, holy shit, like, we're being fucked over and lied to. Like, this stuff is great.
Yeah.
And dedicates his life to letting people know how amazing marijuana is. So he became
literally the father of the hemp movement. And so he actually brought industrial hemp back to, like, 50 countries.
That's not him. It's the guy in the middle, the older guy next to him.
No, I mean, that's the child molester guy.
No. I have photos of the child molester guy. I have a photo of all of us together.
Yeah, all of us together.
You, me, Jack, and the dead child molester. Yeah, man. I knew when you called me up. I just knew. It sounds stupid. I mean, it could have been just a great guess, and I'm all cocky. Like, yeah, I called it. I knew it. But I knew when I was around that there was something wrong with him. I knew. It was so obvious to me. I was like, how are these motherfuckers hanging out with this guy? Every now and then, like, that's the danger that you run if you ever decide to have a party. You know, like, one buddy will bring this one dude that's, like, completely insane, and you're like, how do you not know this guy's insane? You know, like, there's certain people that will, like, hang out with one person who's completely off the charts crazy, and they just accept it probably because they grew up with him or something. And,
right.
Yeah, if you're having a party, that motherfucker can come over crashing. And that's what that guy was. But that guy also, besides being a complete fucking nut and a psychopath and a child molester, he also was, like, really fascinated by the idea of Santa Claus being the Amanita muscaria mushroom, the whole history of that mushroom.
Right.
But people don't know, Santa Claus is red and white. The Amanita muscaria mushroom is red and white. Santa Claus lives in Siberia in the North Pole. The Amanita muscaria mushroom that it's, you know, used by the shamans.
And the reindeer's favorite food is the Amanita muscaria mushroom.
Yeah, reindeer are caribou. That's what a caribou is. And caribou, that's what they love to eat. And they literally will eat your piss. If you step outside of a shaman lodge when you're fucking doing these mushrooms and you piss in the snow, they will knock you over to eat your piss.
For those, you know, what I should mention, for those interested, they can go on my Gnostic Media website. And that's GNOSTICmedia.com. And click on the link up at the top for the Pharmacratic Inquisition DVD. They can watch my whole DVD right there on the website. And it's
you got to take some Adderall before you do this. Right. I'm warning you right now.
It's got all the history of Santa Claus and Christmas and comparison in there. So people can check that out. Or they can order the book as well.
There's so much information. It's so much information. It's what the hell is Adderall? Adderall is one of those ADD drugs that makes you retain everything.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Adderall supposedly is the best if you ever want to work.
Makes you focus. Yeah. It's like cocaine.
Yeah. Legal. My friend, rest his soul, Robert Schimmel, he told me once that someone else, like in his family or something, was on the Adderall, and he accidentally took it, thought it was something else, and freaked out.
Accidentally?
He completely, because he had had a heart attack before. And, you know, he had some serious problems, some health issues. He had cancer. I'm sorry. He didn't have a heart attack. He had cancer. So, you know, he wouldn't be fucking with something as crazy as Adderall if he didn't know what it was. But he said he accidentally took it. He called his doctor. Doctor said, don't worry about it. You're going to be fine. You just, you know, you'll just be under the effects of it for the next, you know, 10 hours or so, whatever the fuck it is. And he said he went on a cleaning rampage. He said he cleaned everything, organized all of his notes, got all of his material together. He said, I've never been more focused in my life.
Yeah, it's for like attention deficit disorder and stuff like that. Yeah.
So I'm recommending Adderall before your book.
Sugar and corn syrup and red food coloring and shit.
Well, I'm sure it's caused by a lot of things, but you know, nutritional deficiencies are responsible for a horde of diseases. Yeah. And so many of us just don't eat, you know, we don't take in vitamins. We don't eat vegetables. People have been asking me about this because I talked about it on the podcast about this Vitamix blender fucking thing that I got. I don't know the name of it because I'm just sitting right here. I forgot. But what it is a blender for, it takes these fruits and vegetables and just mashes them down, like almost like they're pre-digested. And that's the idea behind it. That instead of juice, whereas you're taking juice, you're squeezing all the liquids out of it and you get a lot of minerals and nutrients and everything like that.
But you don't get as much
as when you chop it up and blend it. So you chop it up and blend it. Kevin James has been on this for the last year or so, and he's lost, like I told you, like 80-something pounds. I mean, he looks fucking fantastic, and he swears by this shit. So what I've been eating is just kale, cucumbers, pears, and raw ginger. And I throw it all together in that thing, and it doesn't taste that good, but God damn, you feel awesome. You ever heard of
Sally Fallon's book, Nourishing Traditions?
No.
That's a really good one, too. She argues that the whole saturated animal fat scare is a complete myth, and she's got a lot of documentation to back it up.
Well, a lot of people think that animal fat is actually very good for you.
Well, she proves that that there was a good scandal with the oil companies to cover up that animal fats are...
The oil companies.
The oil companies, because they were selling these newly invented vegetable oils, which weren't around except for olive oil and maybe hemp oil. You didn't have vegetable oils on the market before the 1920s.
So
and
she even
shows
lard?
That you can parallel the explosion of heart disease and cancer in the United States exactly with the use of vegetable oils.
What?
Yep.
That
no kidding.
That is fucking crazy.
And she's got this really good video that you can get it off of Amazon called The Oiling of America. What, you know, it's a really slow-going video, and she's showing all the documentation on the screen, but it'll blow your mind.
My friend Steve Maxwell is this master fitness guy, trainer guy. He's just an incredible dude, but he knows everything about health and nutrition and exercises. And he said that lack of animal fat is the reason why some people can get skin cancer.
Well,
your body can't, like, you like a certain amount of cholesterol, a certain amount of, like,
right,
fat. You need, like, a combination of things in your body.
Basically, what causes the heart attacks and the heart disease and all of that shit is vegetable oils and carbohydrates, especially processed carbos. You know, if you get rid of those things out of your diet, heart disease, obesity, all that shit starts to clear up. You know, certainly eat your vegetables and things, but she says that, you know, what a lot of people do is they'll go out and they'll eat a salad, and then they'll pour salad dressing all over it, which is these processed vegetable oils, instead of, you know, olive oil or butter is basically all you want to use on a salad. Any of these other newfangled oils, don't eat that shit at all.
So it just, what happens when you eat it? Your body just has a hard time processing
Yeah,
it.
Your body, you know, that's what all this trans fat scare. And what they also do is, you know, they're allowed to actually put a half a gram or anything less than a gram of trans fat on any packages today is still labeled as zero trans fats, even though
really?
It's got in it. Yep.
Well, dude, you ever have salad farts? Salad farts are the most uncomfortable farts ever. No, not vegetable farts, salad farts, because that goddamn salad dressing, along with all that
breaking
down broccoli.
Yeah, I usually only use hemp oil or olive oil and balsamic vinegar on my salads.
You put hemp oil on your salad?
Hell yeah, bro, it's delicious. You just lost all credibility, son.
Sometimes you just got to stop with the hemp oil. Put some fucking strawberries on there and call it a day.
It's actually pretty delicious. You know, it's very nutty. It tastes like very similar to olive oil.
True story. Do you ever jerk off with hemp oil?
No.
No?
No.
I would figure, fuck it, man. Why not try it? Maybe jerk off with that stuff that actually gets you high. That shit that they sell at the little droppers that they sell at the medical marijuana places.
Right.
Imagine that. Jerk off to that. Because it's got to get in your skin. That's very thin skin. Your dick would be stoned as fuck.
That's funny.
It would be probably pretty good.
Dick wants to eat some pussy.
Well, don't people put, like, cocaine on girls' clits and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah.
Joey Diaz talk about that?
You put on your dick.
I gotta bump off that girl's pussy. Didn't Joey talk about that?
I forgot all about that. That hotel, in the elevator, I get in the elevator, and they were doing cocaine in the elevator. There was this girl just had her little mirror out, just fucking, I'm like, they didn't even care I walked in the elevator.
Hi, Vegas. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, you fucking
catty bitch. I've seen that shit in elevators in Vegas.
Look at you, you're ratting that girl out.
Fuck that girl.
Now there's going to be cops that are going to invade that place.
Good.
You're going to look for people fucking and cocaine. You're going to ruin the whole party, Brian.
Good.
Well, why? Good because you didn't stay at the Four Seasons?
No. You fucked up? Good because you should not pay. If I wanted to sleep at that hotel, impossible. You should not sell that as a hotel. You
sound like a delusional bitch that goes to a massage parlor where they give out hand jobs, and you didn't know it was a massage parlor where they give out hand jobs, and you leave and you call the cops and you're like, what the fuck? I just want a regular massage. I paid for regular massage. Where's my regular massage? She massages me for just like 5 minutes, then she starts jerking me off.
No, do you think every hotel would be like that?
No, but it's not every hotel, bro. It's the fuck hotel. Everybody else knew it was the fuck. We know now. Like when you go to your hand job place.
I'm just saying, if you were on Yelp and you typed in hotel, that thing has like 3.5 stars, and go, hey, that looks like a nice hotel.
Because it's 3.5 stars from people who work there.
Exactly.
Didn't know it was planted.
I didn't know it was a fucking sex hotel.
Well, now you know.
I know now.
Well, don't complain. Now you
give me my money back. Let me go somewhere else.
No, bitch. No, you had to learn. You had to pay to learn. And now that you know, if you're looking for that, if you're ever looking for a hotel to do ecstasy and Viagra and just start fucking a bunch of random strangers, now you know the spot. You know the spot where people are getting their freak on. Yeah. Just like if you go to a massage parlor and they rub your feet and then start sucking your dick, you know that's a different kind of massage parlor. All right? Don't be hating. Brian,
fuck that hotel.
Don't give out the name either.
If the people at Yelp are listening, please give me my Yelp elite status back.
Don't
so
give
I can
it to him. Listen to him; he's bitching. Don't give it to him. I would say he's my friend, and I'd say ignore his requests. Fuck you, dude. It's ridiculous. He's hating, right? Don't you think he's hating?
Oh yeah,
it's total party.
I would love to have seen. I would love to have seen
Peter McWilliams for Todd McCormick.
Yeah, you will love to see Joe turn around and go to another hotel.
Yeah, because you can.
Well, you could too, man. You just got to be willing to bite the bullet. Chomp down.
Yeah. Fuck that hotel in the ass.
In the ass? How rude, dude. That's all I have to say to you. How rude.
You shouldn't call it a hotel. That's all I'm saying.
Another guy we hung out with this weekend was George Tsoukalos? Tsoukalos. Giorgio Tsoukalos, the guy from Ancient Aliens. What a fascinating cat.
That dude is awesome.
He is great. We had a great fucking time. He was way cooler than I could have imagined. Both him and Anthony Bourdain. Way cooler than I could have imagined. Giorgio came backstage with us. I don't want to say he smoked some weed, but he smoked some weed. We had a great fucking time. We hung out. Me and that dude, like, right away, clicked instantly. You know, he makes some fantastical claims on that show, but, you know, when you talk to him in real life, he ain't married to anything. He's not married to any thought. You know, we discussed aliens. We discussed possibilities. He's like, it's just a possibility. And there's another possibility. And there's not.
Yeah.
And he's not married to any of them. And he's super cool and a really nice guy. He comes off. I liked him on the show. I liked that wacky. I would be like, this wacky motherfucker. He's like saying all kinds of crazy shit.
Yeah.
But sometimes he would annoy me. I'm going to be honest. Like you said, like maybe Atlantis was a spaceship and took off. You know, maybe my dick is a helicopter and I'll fly to Mars. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Maybe Santa Claus is a mushroom.
Yeah.
Well, that's arguing the arbitrary. But if you don't have any evidence for it, you just completely dismiss it. It's nonsense.
But it's a show.
Right.
That's what he's doing. He's doing a TV show. And when you're doing a TV show, look, you know, I can tell you right off the bat, there's some shit that you say that kind of move the show along, you know, and there's some shit that you say, maybe, what if? Maybe you want to hear something crazy? I'll give you some crazy shit. You want a sound bite? I'll give you a sound bite, maybe. And, you know, you might not even believe that maybe, but you say it anyway. But in real life, talking to him in real life, he's cool as fuck.
Great hair, too.
His fucking hair is all crazy. It's like some crazy peacock thing going on. He fucking owns it, dude. He owns it. He loves it. He has crazy beads on and shit. And yeah,
I dig that guy. Jeans, too.
Yeah, I dig him. He's going to be on the show July 27th. This weekend, it's going to be me and Mad Flavor, a.k.a. Joe Diaz, at the Irvine Improv. That is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, you dirty Orange County bitches. And this is going to be it's almost sold out on Friday and Saturday already, and then Sunday is the 10th is the last day we're doing it, so it should be a lot of fun. You know, that's an awesome club. Irvine is a place, it's a great place to do stand up. I love that
great
little
club.
That whole area
down there before.
Yeah, that area is nice. It's like a nice little oasis of cool shit to do.
Isn't there like a Ferris wheel? Is that the one with the Ferris wheel?
I don't think it is a Ferris wheel.
Wheel? Yeah, there's a Ferris wheel there, yeah.
There is? In Irvine?
Yeah, and then there was even a place out back to smoke out.
Yeah.
Know? Yeah, well,
always, that's right.
You got to have that.
Right.
If you're going to have a goddamn comedy show. Yeah. I got a little nervous that Anthony Bourdain was in the audience, and I was worried if I was too high. I was like, how many hits did I have? I had 3 hits. Shit, I'm skiing right now. Because when you have 3 hits, you got to, for as long as I know that I've gone over my material and I know that I've been performing a lot and I know that I'm in the groove, I can just go out there and ski. And by skiing means, you ever watch those videos where a dude gets dropped on the top of a mountain on a helicopter? And
like
then
do a lot of cocaine?
Right. And then he's going down that mountain, and it's some uncharted territory. And you know, this guy fucking hits a rock the wrong way. He is done.
Right.
This guy's
or
done.
Or the avalanche coming down right behind him.
Yeah, the avalanche behind him. And you know, there's no way he can stop. He cannot control this. He's going way too fast. That's how you feel when you get 3 hits in. So you got to know what the fuck you're doing. When you go on stage that high, you got to be prepared. But fortunately, I was. fortunately, I was completely comfortable and in the groove. These comedy shows have gotten 80% better in the last year and a half, and it's because of the podcast. It's 100% because of the podcast. I asked people on stage, how many guys listened to the podcast? The place went fucking crazy. It was all of them. It was all 1,500 people that were there. That it's nuts, man. They're all polite and friendly. And it's like it used to be like you have to battle just to get ground on stage. And now when Joey and Ari and Doug Benson went on stage, all three of them got huge rounds of applause. Like everybody was psyched to see Ari. They were psyched to see Joey. They were psyched to see Doug. It's just an amazing thing now. Yeah, it's so different.
Even in Vegas. Too. That place is so huge. That's where the Lion King is. Like usually this huge fucking show is usually there. And
Yeah, no, we packed it just talking. It's ridiculous. Comedy is a strange thing, but it's still my favorite thing to watch, man. You know, I thought about staying an extra day. I was going to stay till Sunday.
You're so lucky
because Bill Burr and Jim Norton and Jim Brewer and Dave Attell are all doing a show together at the Palm. And I, for a minute, I was thinking, why don't I, you know, fly out Mrs. Rogan for the day and we'll go to see a comedy show? Like, maybe she would be into that. And I'm like, get the fuck home.
Yeah.
You know, I changed my mind. But I do love stand-up so much that I almost stayed an extra day to watch this show, because I went out to dinner Saturday night with Jim Norton and Bill Burr and my friend Justin from the Action Report, and Russell Peters was there too, and so we're all sitting around and Kenny, you know, Club Soda Kenny, we're all sitting around shooting the shit, and they were telling me about Jim Brewer's new bit, and Jim Brewer apparently has some closer that is just insane.
So really?
About him, his dad taking a shit, and they were all talking about like how this thing builds up, like his dad shit in the car. His dad's like an older guy. And apparently it's the funniest fucking bit of all time. And they were, and I was like,
you're
God
doing
damn
comedy
it
now, right, Brian?
Yeah.
If you can call it that.
Thanks.
No, he's doing well. He did well in front of large audiences.
Ice House Thursday.
Brian went on in front of, one of the first times I ever got him to do comedy, all right? This took mad balls. This was way before the podcast. The audience was all meatheads. It was a UFC audience in Atlanta, and it was a midnight show. So it was a midnight fucking show, and Brian goes on in the middle of the fucking show and kills. You pulled yourself out of the fire because you started bombing, and then you pulled yourself out of the fire, and then at the end you ended like really strong, and that was the first time he did comedy in like years and years,
5 or 6 years,
really.
Yeah, but nice. Then I've thrown him up a bunch of times, and I've thrown him up in Austin, Texas, in front of sold out crowds, and you know it's interesting. Like your introduction to comedy is 1,000% different than the average person's introduction.
It's cheat codes. It's up, yeah, down, down.
You
left,
cheated
right
on two ways. One, because everybody knows who you are before you even go on stage, because they know you from the podcast now.
Right.
You know, and they know you from all the videos that you've made. You know, if you ever watched the Carlos Mencia video, that was Brian's work. You know, there's all these videos called Death Squad videos. They're all Brian's work. And so they already know who you are, and you're an open micer, basically. You know, you're just starting out, and yet they still know who you are, and they're all clapping and cheering to watch you practice out your new jokes.
Yeah, it kind of sucks because there's more, a little bit more pressure, because now people know who I am, and now I'm getting thrown up in front of sold-out shows. I actually have to act somewhat like I fit in, you know?
You're doing fine. You just do it. Just be relax. You
smoke some weed before you go on stage.
No, that's a bad idea, I found.
Brian has to you could go, and I'm not dissing you in any way, I'm just being honest. You could go and work with a coach who would help you learn how to speak clear.
I figured it out. It's 100% marijuana. It does not work for me. When I get stoned, when I get stoned, my brain goes into overdrive. I'm thinking 1,000 things at once. Like I'm almost like trying to figure out the
thread of joke or whatever.
So am I. You just need to learn how to manage it with your mouth.
Yeah, but when I'm on stage, my memory's everywhere.
That's because you're still nervous.
You know,
exactly. You just gotta do it more.
Exactly.
Go do it 20 or 30 times and get over that, and then it'll kick in.
Yeah, he's totally right. I just found that, you know, I'd rather not. I'd rather just go out with like a drink in me, and sure, I'm good.
Nothing Joe tried wrong to get me to go on do stage. What about 6 years ago, and I chickened out?
Yeah, he chickened out. I try to get everybody to do it. So I think they're smart. I think someone's smart. I'm like, look, if you're smart, you can figure out comedy.
Yeah,
you know, if you're smart, you're nice, and you make your friends laugh, you can figure out comedy. It ain't easy, but goddamn, if you could do it, it's the greatest job in the history of the world. I'm constantly trying to recruit people to try stand up comedy. I ran into some fucking 17-year-old kid in Vegas. I talked to him for 20 minutes because him and his friend were thinking about doing stand up comedy, and they were asking me for advice. And I said, all right, I'm not doing anything. I'll tell you everything I know. You know, this is what you got to do. You got to write like fucking crazy. You got to go up every time you can. You got to listen to your own shit. Go back and listen to your recordings. Be honest. If a bit is bombing, try it differently. And if eventually you're going to have to give up on that bitch and move on, constantly keep writing. Like, we went on this long thing. I go, put yourself in positions where you know some weird shit might go down. That's a good way to write material. Like, you got to think that way. You got to be a professional party animal. You know, for real, like the greatest comics ever, the Richard Pryors and Sam Kinisons, they were out there getting shit done. All right, it wasn't just going on stage and talking. They were living a crazy life too. That's part of the program. It doesn't mean abusive. It doesn't mean what they did, but it means, you know, try shit out.
Don't go drive fucking down the 15 at 200 miles somewhere. An hour and getting a head on.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I moved to Colorado. It was one of the reasons. Besides wanting to get away, I knew that I was going to get some material out of that. Like, you got to do things like that. So I'm a fucking huge supporter of stand up comedy. I try to get everybody to do it. I try to get Tate to do it. I got you to do it. Well, you had already done it before, but I got, you know, I've gotten a couple of people to do it. I got Eddie Bravo to do it. It's just nobody sticks with it.
The big thing is that it's definitely, I think, something you have to start when you're younger, and you have to make that your career. And I think all these people that you had try it, yeah, they had their own thing going. They were doing it for fun on the side, kind of like what I do, but they don't want that as a job because that's really risky to do when you're 36.
Back when Joe first asked us to do it, we were all young, you know?
Yeah, back in the day. We're old as fuck now. Riders on the storm.
Have you ever driven home from Vegas and seen that abandoned water slide amusement park on the side of the road?
Oh, what the hell was that?
It's creepy.
Lake Dolores. Yeah. That's what it was.
So
yeah.
We were going to break into it and just like walk around with some cameras and stuff on the way home, but the traffic was so bad, so we decided not to. So if there's this Wikipedia page all about it, and it's so amazing. The history of that amusement park, like in the 50s and 60s, this businessman bought it, and he just put this water slide amusement park in the middle of the Mojave Desert, I think it is, or something like that, in the middle of the desert. And there's this huge water park, and it was 50s themed, so it was like very like 50s music and 60s music and stuff like that. And it just, you know, it was millions of dollars in the debt.
Well, dude, I remember in like the late 70s and 80s, all the time on TV, you would see Lake Dolores commercials and stuff. But you know, they would say it's on I-15, but they didn't tell you it's three fucking hours from here. Right?
Yeah, yeah. And so, people rebought it and renamed it things. Every 10 years, it would close and then be closed for like 5 years, and somebody else would rebuy and try it for a year and then go bankrupt. And now somebody else has just bought it again, is trying it again, and they have like this whole YouTube page and website all about them like restoring it and stuff like that. It is the dumbest idea ever. Like, people are fucking retarded. Like, who is going to go to the middle of a desert to go to?
I guess for them, like, they're planning on that business when you have the occasional car accident that shuts down the whole fucking freeway.
Let's go to the water park.
Maybe they'll start car accidents of their own. They'll lay down some fucking nail strips.
Yeah. Oh, man, I've been out there on Memorial Day weekend out in Vegas, and it was like 12, 14 hours getting across that four-hour stretch of freeway, man. It sucked, man.
12, 14 hours, really? Was it just that bad?
It was 5, 10 miles an hour most of the way.
Imagine if you had a clutch.
Oh, God. Yeah, it took me 6 hours yesterday.
Driving a standard in that kind of traffic will drive you fucking insane.
Yeah.
6 hours. Don't fucking drive ever.
How come they never expanded that? She went back? You got caught going back?
I got going back. I didn't think about it.
Because going there, you went easy, right?
Easy. 3 hours and 15 minutes. Okay. Fucking amazing. Right. Super fast. Way back, we stayed an extra day so I could do a set at the Naughty Show. And then I didn't think about it. I was like, wait, everyone has Monday off. So they're probably going to have to work Tuesday. So everybody's going to be driving back Monday. So I picked the worst day to ever drive back from Vegas.
If it was only 6 hours, weekend. You got off light.
Yeah,
six
hours, absolutely. Seriously. And that's leaving 9 a.m. too. I mean, I left fucking early.
Wow, 9 a.m., 6 hours. Yeah, you got to go like 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
You got to just stay up. You just got to take those 5-hour energy drinks.
Jenna Hayes did that 2 a.m. Take
like that,
1 a.m.
Just slightly less than what you get with a stroke. Just less than a stroke's dose.
Yeah.
And then just ride that bitch.
Just right when you start twitching.
Read all of. That's what, all night, foot to the fucking floor, looking out for coyotes, both human and otherwise, right? That's a creepy fucking stretch of road, man. That's a boulevard of broken dreams.
You know, they were supposed to put a bullet train out there like 10 years ago. They never fucking did.
I think they're still doing it. Isn't it from Santa Monica to Vegas or something like that?
They have to come up long dollars to make that happen.
Well, yeah, and it's, you know, and it's such a long stretch of highway. That, you know, it's been what, two lanes since the freaking 60s?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. That road is ridiculous. But you know what? No one's going to do anything different because the airline industry doesn't want anybody driving. You know, the airline industry wants everybody, you know, flying as much as possible. And then who's going to spend the money is Vegas going to spend the money? You're talking about a lot of fucking money.
Probably.
Because nobody else is going to want to. Like, why would we do that? How about you figure it out on your own fuckface?
Well, now California has casinos as well, so yeah. That's probably put a dampener on the whole
But they don't really have casinos. I mean, they do and they don't. You know, they're not full casinos. You can't do everything at the casinos. You can't play slots and blackjack and poker. You know what I mean? It's like they have like little restrictions. Like this one, you can only do this. Yeah. You can only play
cards. It's not
a
full casino.
Yeah.
You might know this. A lot of people have been telling me this lately, that the medical marijuana in Vegas, you can use your California license, and they accept the California license in Vegas.
They do that in a couple different states.
Really?
Yeah. They told me they do that in Denver as well.
I did not know that. Yeah. No, that's the first I heard. Yeah, Todd or Chris Conrad would be up on that.
I guess, you would have to. It would be different things state by state, you know? Yeah. But they took it when we were in Vancouver.
Yeah.
When Vancouver, they accepted our California recommendations.
You need one in Vancouver? Because last time I was up there was Blunt Brothers and stuff. You could just go in
BC?
In and smoke.
British Columbia, you mean? Yeah. Yeah. Not Vancouver, Washington. No, yeah, you did. There was pharmacies now. They have dispensaries in Vancouver, BC.
Nice.
Yeah, they're setting it up just like California. But California is we're at the front.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
There's nowhere like this anywhere on the planet, I don't think.
Well, you know, and right now Amsterdam is shutting everything down, so guess where all that business is going to start coming? It's either going to be here or it's going to be Vancouver, BC.
What the fuck is Amsterdam thinking? That is the dumbest shit ever. You guys are known for weed, and you're going to close off that
part? And it's been legal for, what, 35 years or something, and now they're going to shut it down to only residents? What the hell, you know?
Do you think it's just... Yeah, what is that? What it is?
Too many people tripping and fucking. I mean, there's a thing about it being cool,
but like 10. But see, how many people do dumb shit on alcohol every night? Alcohol is by far the worst drug out there in every study ever done.
Good point. When you have Anne Frank's house and there's people shrooming like Duncan went to Amsterdam.
One person or a couple of people that dove off a bridge and committed suicide on mushrooms in Amsterdam, and it's like, you know, how many freaking people do that shit a night on alcohol Holland alone?
Well, so, people are scared, you know.
You know, it's like, oh my God, they would have done it anyway.
It's way easier to ban things than it is to make things legal. And we make it very easy to write things off and decide that, you know, like there's people without any studies.
Outlaw behavior. Oh my God.
There's people without any studies whatsoever that are trying to outlaw salvia, you know, and they're pulling it off in various states and making it illegal. And there's no research behind any of this. They're just pulling it off.
Oh, yeah. And all this stuff is scare tactics. You know, it's like this kid did. You know, a couple of years ago, there was this big scare back east. This kid had done salvia several months before, wrote in his diary that he could see how half the shit in his life was complete bullshit. He was starting to see through the big fucking lie out there. And then they said, you know, months later, they tried to say, oh, well, he committed suicide, you know, because of salvia, even though he was not on salvia and he had done it months before. You know, it's that he, you know, he certainly started seeing how a lot of what the media and government and things like that tell you is bullshit.
Until they come up with a suicide
pill. That's like
pill.
Saying, you know, LSD, you know, somebody waking up from LSD like Timothy Leary, and then years later they commit suicide. Oh, it was because of the LSD.
Okay, but you can clearly make some sort of a connection between some of those kids that got experimented on in Harvard, like Ted Kaczynski, and his erratic behavior afterwards.
Well, sure. I mean,
there is a connection between really
I would love to know
what they did to him.
I would really like to know what they did to Ted Kaczynski.
Well, people don't know the Unabomber Ted Kaczynski was a part of the Harvard LSD studies,
and he was professor of math up at Berkeley. This was no dumb shit. This was a was top
brilliant.
Scholar.
Yeah, he just completely lost his marbles presumably during these LSD experiments. Maybe they exposed something. Maybe they broke something.
What's that documentary called about him?
That's a good question. I don't remember.
Oh shoot!
But I've seen it.
Yeah,
yeah. I forget. Just look up a Unabomber documentary. I'm sure you'll find it.
But it's about something with the computer industry as well, I think.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, it's really fascinating what he did. When is it? No, it's a new one. When your brother is the Unabomber. The net.
Yeah,
that's it. He saved up all his money after these studies and worked as a professor of mathematics at Berkeley. And when he was working there, he was just studying and saving up his money and trying to figure out what the fuck he was going to do when he moved to the woods and how he was going to attack technology.
Yeah, you know, I would love to know who was in charge of the study that he was in. Was it Dick Alpert? Was it Tim Leary?
What he did was absolutely horrible. You know, and what he did, for sure, that guy should go to jail for it. For sure, he was absolutely insane. For sure, he was homicidal. But what the thought behind what he was saying was that technology is eventually going to kill us.
Right. Well, yeah.
And we need to stop
it. Well, basically, what he was arguing was that they're using the technology to enslave everybody and to dumb us down and to control everything. And he was trying to stop it because he started being the math professor at mm-hmm. Berkeley, started seeing how the whole system worked, and he wanted to shut it down.
Right. I mean, well, the way he did it was, I mean, he's insane.
You know, yeah.
What, killed he a bunch of people, fucked people's lives right. up. You know,
he went about it, you know, he didn't use critical thinking properly right. in his analysis of his solution.
But there's something to what he's saying. The idea that technology eventually is going to overtake us is absolutely, I mean, it's discussed in depth by thousands of scientists and futurists and the Ray Kurzweils and
my
all these.
My grandfather.
Your grandfather talks about that
fucking
shit?
Fucking hates technology, says it's overtaking us.
Does he?
Used to say that all the time.
Well, I think anybody who grew up, if your grandfather's an older guy, he grew up in a time where there was no phones and nothing.
We put out a documentary last November called What You've Been Missing, Episode 1. The Noble Lie, which goes into this whole use of technology to dumb us down. So anybody wants to check that out, look it up.
I think it's a silly argument. I don't think it dumbs us down. I think there are dumber people than ever.
Well, but it's
because life has become easy for them. It's easy to become dumb.
Well, check out the how they're doing it. They're using the B.F. Skinner's ideas from the Skinner box and how they controlled animals and things like that. There's a lot of Edward Bernays stuff.
What are you talking about?
Well, the Skinner box is a box that they would put pigeons and rats and things like that in and get them to do certain things for food or whatever on a stimuli. And they've learned to apply that stuff directly to computer games and to you know, purchasing in the grocery stores and things like that. But it's an hour and a half long documentary. Just, you know, What You've Been Missing, Episode 1. Check it out sometime.
What You've Been Missing, Episode 1, and the
right.
Okay.
And they can go to the Gnostic Media website and click on the videos thing there, and it'll be right there.
Okay. And what is the conclusion?
Well, that there are certain people using marketing and advertising and computer technology to mind control people, and it's very, very simple to do.
Is it mind control?
Mind control at face value. Once you see how it works, it's real blatant.
Do you accept the argument, though, that marketing is mind control and that getting people obsessed objects?
See, the Absolutely. Thing how mind control works is, you know, I mentioned this Trivium thing earlier. By people not having the Trivium, that's what enables marketing and public relations, the political system, the law system that we have today. That's what enables it to work.
Right.
That stuff wouldn't be able to function at all.
That's why it doesn't work on any intelligent person. No intelligent person watches any nonsense propaganda on television and buys it immediately because you've accumulated a certain amount of information in your mind.
Like, you know, say if you go out and you study logical fallacies for 20 minutes and then you go study commercials, you'll see how every commercial is filled with logical fallacies. So once you can identify those logical fallacies, you begin to see how they're using these lies against you everywhere, and then you just block them out.
What's the end game, though? Enlightenment?
Well the end game is just to learn gain your own autonomy, your own adulthood, really. It's to see through the crap and gain yourself back.
It is important, though, to enjoy life, right? It is important to do this and to figure out how to enjoy life, don't you think?
Let me put it to you this way. In ancient Roman times, they considered those who had studied the seven liberal arts as free, and those who didn't were slaves. The slaves were not allowed to study the seven liberal arts, this trivium or quadrivium thing. As soon as you got free of slavery, that was the first thing you did, was undertake a study of the seven liberal arts, right? So let's say nobody in our society, in the masses, even has that education now. So we would be considered in Roman times the slave class. Okay, so when you see the word freedom, literally, which is what the word liberal is from the Latin word book, liber. And so Liber and Library, Liberty, these are
words. You're going Latin on me, bro. Isn't this
but this is
Event Horizon?
This is where
eyeballs out.
This is where freedom comes from. So when people learn this stuff, this is how they got free. So, you know, it's the difference of knowing that you're a slave
I totally agree with you on this. We're basically, this is a very complicated way of saying that our education system sucks and could possibly be set up that way on purpose.
Don't dumb your audience down too much, bro.
It's not dumbing them down at all. Great. I'm just kind of filling in the voids here, trying to bring this show back to life. The idea is that at one point in time, people were taught this stuff on a regular basis, and now our education system is no longer are people.
It's been completely removed from people's education.
Do you think that that really is on purpose? Do you think that's a design?
Oh yeah, there's evidence that it was done on purpose. Really? You know, and in fact, I just saw an article by this woman Kelly from Canada Free Press yesterday talking about the American freedom or the American rebellion. From England was originally centered around the trivium and classical education.
Okay, so when people are in school today, you know, when they come up with some sort of a lesson plan for the year, is there someone who's actually saying, "Hey, we don't want these people smarter. Let's like dumb this shit down."
Yeah, and you can see
where is that happening? Where is that happening?
If people want evidence of that, they can study Charlotte Iserbeet's book.
Do you believe this, Brian?
No.
And well, I would suggest people study two people primarily, John Taylor Gatto, and he's written a very good book, Underground History of American Education for people that read, and also Charlotte Iserbeet's book, The Dumbing Down of America, which she also has a lot of primary documents in her book on the Reese Commission and how they did
stuff. Okay, let's say
so
those
just
two
check
names.
It out before you dismiss it.
Let's say those two names one more time. You're freaking people the fuck out. People on Twitter
John
right now are going
Taylor
nuts.
Gatto.
They're saying this is the most name drops anyone has ever had in a podcast. Please fucking write this shit somewhere. I'm freaking out. People are trying
John
to keep up
Taylor Gatto and Charlotte Iserbeet.
Okay, well, these are the last people's books we're going to tell people to read, because otherwise we're going to look like a goddamn university study
course. Just go on my website. I've got a video up on Gatto right on my website. They can look at it there.
Okay. They'll do that. Now, how long have you been into this studying of psychedelic chemicals and, you know, the relationship between, you know, these things and religions? And you've been in this for a long-ass time, but how did you ever get into it to the point where this is like how you make a living?
Well, let's see. I've been in it at least 22 years or so. But originally I got in it working with Jack Herer on the California Hemp Initiative, and he was the one who originally turned me on to John Allegro's book, The Sacred Mushroom and the Cross. And
what did you feel like when you first discovered this stuff?
I thought Jack was completely batshit crazy when he first told me about it. The same when when you met us and you thought we were completely crazy.
I didn't think he was crazy. I thought, first of all, I'd been exposed to a bunch of things that I never would have thought existed before by that time. So I was already open to the possibility, like, who the fuck knows? I'm pretty ignorant as to the way the universe really operates. You know, just started reading about quantum physics and, you know. You know what I mean? Like, you start reading about things in superposition where a particle's moving and not moving and in one place and in another at the same time. And like, what the fuck is real and what's not? And what is the observer? So when then some guy tells you that he thinks that mushrooms, you know, probably shaped religion, that's not even crazy.
Where'd you meet Jack? At a Grateful Dead concert, or did you go to school with him?
Actually, my sister turned me on to his book when I was probably 18. And then I had met him at a hemp rally. And in December 2002, I went to his house and we instantly hit it off, and we were friends for 18 years, and I was one of the people that helped bury him in April last year.
Let me ask you this, because you know, on your show, for sure, you preach to the converted, you know, you have a really big following of people who, like me, are kind of pretty well-versed in this subject matter and understand a lot about, you know, psychedelic drugs and the relationship they've had to humanity for thousands and thousands of years. But what about the average person? Once you run into, like, some regular square dude, and he – so what do you – what do you do, Jan? First of all, he's got to get by your name, Jan.
Yeah.
It looks like Jan to me, because it's the way he spells it.
Well, it's Scandinavian, right?
Yeah, he's
English pronounces J as J, so it's more like you're yawning, like, oh, well, you know.
Do you have Viking
like
blood?
Like Johan or something like that.
Is there Viking blood in your past?
I'm primarily Danish, Welsh, and Scottish.
Any Viking in there? Any of those?
Oh, possibly. Who knows?
Who's a Viking? What was it? Norway?
Yeah, the Norse.
Norse? The Norsemen, right? Okay, so no Viking.
Eric.
Hmm. But now, but what do squares do when you meet some regular dude like in your neck of the woods in your small town that you live in, and he's like, "So what do you write about there, Jan?"
Well,
and you're like, "Well,
I don't." You know, it's interesting. I usually don't even talk about it in my neck of the woods. I'm usually so busy with work and doing my show, and you know, it takes me 2 hours to answer all the emails. And I hear from people all the time that see my work online, and holy shit, I just saw your work, and it completely blew me away. But you know, I very rarely have people that come to me and just say, "Oh, that's completely batshit crazy."
But often do you communicate about what you do to someone who is completely uninitiated? So what I'm trying to say is, I've had some conversations before, and one of them I had on a plane with a doctor,
right?
And he was a very intelligent guy, and we sat down, and you know, he was just being real friendly, and started off with like fear factor questions, and then,
well, for somebody like that, you start off, you know, with ancient primary sources and things like that, because you know, a doctor is going to want to cut straight to the facts, no bullshit. So just give them the primary text.
Okay. Listen.
Give them the iconography.
Listen, dude. It's a social situation. You're having a drink with a guy on a plane. You're not breaking things down for him. You're just talking. You're shooting the shit. It's conversation. Right. And we broached the subject of first marijuana, and then he was asking about that book, DMT, the Spirit Molecule,
right,
that was sitting on my table.
Hey, you just mentioned another book.
So you have this guy where you're talking to him, so he's an intelligent guy that's like 50 years old that has no experience whatsoever in anything psychedelic. And when I started describing the experience and I started talking about it, then he started getting interested. And then he started talking to me about it, and then he started writing things down, and he started like taking little notes on it, things that he wanted to investigate. And he asked me, you know, like where I could get the book, you know, is it on a website? Can I get it on Amazon?
You know, somebody for that, something that might be easier for a guy like that would be like Dr. Roland Griffith's work.
Oh, he's fucking name dropping again, this cunt. Jesus Christ. Roland Griffith's book, sorry.
His study, Psilocybin and Religious Experience. And that was all over the news a couple of years ago.
Is that the most recent one?
Yeah, it's very recent stuff. And
Psilocybin and Religious Experience. And what's this dude's name again?
Roland Griffiths.
You know, it's, I mean, how many fucking more books can come out about it before they start like teaching it in mainstream?
Well, you know, what's interesting is in December, Loma Linda University Medical Center, which is a Seventh-day Adventist medical school, and it's considered one of the best in the world, they had me come in.
Is that like a Mormon? Seventh-day Adventist?
No, it's not Mormons, but Seventh-day Adventists. They're Seventh-day Adventists. Well, it's a Christian group, but anyway, they worship on Saturday instead of Sunday. They worship on the Sabbath, basically. So this school had me come into their pharmacy department and give a two-hour lecture on the history of the medical and spiritual applications of psychedelic drugs.
Whoa. What was that like? Did you get a lot of hippie chicks after the show? Wanted to get a piece of that author? I want to sit down with you, man. I have so many thoughts that are so similar to yours. Do you get that a lot? Like real freaky. You must get groupies.
Unfortunately, the class was, those who were allowed to participate were the top of the class, so they couldn't, you know, there were no anybody who thought that they thought was going to deviate from the norm of society were even allowed to attend the lecture.
Wow. Huh. Do you get psychedelic groupies? Do you get girls who are like interested because they're like really into psychedelics?
She likes your colors.
Yeah, there's been some
your groupies. Aura.
Yeah.
He has a beautiful aura.
Dude, he's got the same sign as me.
I see you in your documentaries and I just have this connection.
You know, in the Pharmacratic Inquisition, I was never in the documentary, but they can see me in the one that you and I were in, American Drug War.
Yeah. That was a long ass time ago, right? Did they wind up using your footage in that?
Yeah, they used like 15 seconds or 30 seconds or something of it.
It's
and then Kevin Booth, he was going to use a lot more of that later on, but I guess never went back to it.
It's what I was saying is what I was trying to address by asking you what it's like when you talk to like regular people that don't have any experience in this. It's a very weird subject to broach, all of it. The use of psychedelic drugs is anything more than a party favor.
Well, you know, what's interesting is last April up in San Jose, there's a group called MAPS, the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies. They held a huge conference. It was the first one in like 35 or 40 years, but there was 800 or 900 doctors and professors there at this conference, and the whole thing was about the latest research in psychedelics.
And they do this on a regular basis, right? This is
they are planning. There are different ones, but this was the first and the largest.
So this is a national one instead of regional. Is that what it is?
Well, this one was the largest where it was like spread out over 3 days. almost 100 presenters, you know, literally people kept flying in from all over the world, medical professionals from all over the world, experts in psychedelics presenting on just everything. So, I mean, you know, the psychedelic craze and fear of the 60s is pretty much over, and it's becoming a lot more in tune with the academic side and with real knowledge about psychedelics instead of just the fear that was put out by the mass media for the last 40 years.
So you really think there's a shift? You really think things are actually changing?
Oh, yeah. Well, there was a recent... just in the last 6 or 8 months, I think maybe it was October last year, ecstasy, MDMA, was approved for treating PTSD in military professionals. And there's pilot studies...
How open is that?
Or pilot treatment studies happening in Colorado right now.
How often is that happening, though? Are people actually giving MDMA to people that come
Israel
back from the war?
Is using it. There's a couple of other different places that are already using it for the treatment of PTSD.
But is that actually happening in America?
Yes, it's happening in Colorado right now. It's already been approved for use. And the one thing that's approved for use in almost every other country in the world is Iboga from Ibogaine in the treatment of alcoholism and heroin and opium addiction. And that's got like a 92% success rate. But unfortunately, the United States is one of the only countries in the world where drug addiction treatment is illegal with Ibogaine. And ayahuasca has also been shown to be very effective in the treatment of alcoholism and opiate addiction.
Yeah, we're held captive. We're held captive by corrupt politicians that
have gotten tons of money
from special interest groups, and that's what's wrong with us.
Right. Yeah, I don't want to drop any names. If there's any addicts out there that want more information, contact me through my website.
You can find Ibogaine research places in Mexico where they have Ibogaine treatment
centers. Sure, or Canada, or pretty much anywhere in Europe.
I didn't know they have them in Canada, but I know a buddy who has gone to Mexico several times to do it, and he said that it's changed his entire life, changed the way he looks at everything, made him see himself for who he really is and abandon all of his false patterns of behavior that he had gotten stuck with and all the false connections that he had made in his mind that were constantly tripping him up.
Yeah, Ibogaine actually blocks the opiate's ability to trigger those receptors in your body. So you come down from this 12 or 24-hour trip, and you are literally not addicted anymore. It cuts that addiction off. And at the same time, it's like, in AA, when you have to have the life review, it forces that life review in that long trip. So not only do you get the life review, but at the end of the trip, it blocks you from being addicted anymore.
It's insane. It's like it's designed to cure you of any wrong addiction.
And it's an extremely powerful psychedelic. It's been used by the Weedy in Africa for thousands of years.
And yet it's illegal.
And it's illegal in the U.S.
It was passed in the 1970 classification, that whole ruling that made all those different psychedelic drugs illegal. Was it just lumped into there?
I'm sure it probably was.
What's amazing is the ones that didn't get lumped in there that they didn't know about, like 5-methoxy-DMT.
Right, which is the most powerful psychedelic on earth. And there is a church operating in the United States called TOAD, T-O-A-D, that operates using 5-methoxyne and dimethyltryptamine.
And this may or may not have happened. It might be fiction. But a long time ago, maybe me and Jan did some of that shit. Maybe we learned a lot.
Yeah.
And we bought it online. Maybe we bought it online easy.
Don't do DMT with Eddie Bravo. That's what I learned.
Yeah, Eddie he's grown as a man since then, although now he's wearing me with his love for bunnies.
So I love it. It's the best thing that could have ever happened to Eddie
Bravo.
Yeah,
I think it's channeling. He's ready to have a child, so now he's like really into bunnies.
I love it. Loving
small things.
The fact that Eddie Bravo can make me almost cry now is amazing.
About a bunny?
No, like just when we had him on that last podcast, it was just like the most... His son and everything. I was like, damn, this is a softer side of Sears.
Yeah, and then he shut down on us, and the conversation was like just fucking ended. It hit a wall and just dropped off, and then Eddie sat there with a sad face, and Brian was half asleep. So I'm like, hey, is anybody out there?
Hi, everybody.
It was like that fucking show where the guy's on the radio trying to talk to the past. Shh. Remember? Oh, it was in the movie Contact. Remember? She was trying to call her dad.
Oh, yeah.
Saddest moment of all time. The little girl was trying to call her dad.
Yeah.
She almost got to him. She couldn't get the medicine to him.
That was pretty sad.
So what I was trying to get at is, do you ever have any interaction with regular people who just think you're fucking crazy for studying this stuff?
Yeah, do you turn off? Do you turn off?
You know, occasionally you'll have the person who's never looked at any of the research or evidence call up when I'll do a radio interview or something all freaked out about it. But... You know, they're
telling people to do drugs, and I think what you're doing is wrong.
Oh yeah, you've got
drugs are bad.
Shit. I mean,
you should be natural.
Me and Johnny Rotten gave you DMT, and look what happened after that. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Johnny Rotten was on the podcast once. We talked about it. About psychedelic traveling changes the whole world, because if you go through that and you your world doesn't change, well then man, you must have known something already. You must have already. I mean, you must be the smartest person in the world. How could you not improve radically?
Multi-state consciousness theory.
McKenna had the best description of it, and his description was that he looked at your culture as an operating system, and he said that there is only one way to abandon this operating system. You have to take something, a program that sort of reprograms your operating system,
right.
And you could do it, and you know, name out all these different psychedelic compounds. And then he said, or you could do it in DMT form, which is like a compressed, you know, 15-minute form. You know, it's like taking something, a zip file, you know, and unzipping it into your hard drive. Just boom. You got to change.
2 terabytes of new information that flying in at once.
It is not something that everybody should do. I think some people have a hard time with regular life. I think some people have a hard time with just fucking getting through life. And it could be a whole host of things wrong with their mind.
I think that's largely because of societal conditioning in the first place. So
it gets caught
in this catch-22 loop.
It could be medical. It could be a lot of other things. There's some people that have issues that, like, just holding on to regular reality. So I'm not suggesting that everybody do it, but I'm suggesting that we should be able to go places and try it. If you're a fucking regular person and you got your shit together, and you know, and you're curious about expanding your mind and your consciousness with these experiences, there should be a place where we could go, where the government fucking makes sure the stuff is pure, they get taxes from it, everybody profits, and the society profits, because you're gonna have
fuck
better
the government
people.
Though, man, I mean, it really needs to go back to just being free, you know.
It should. Okay, that would be nice, but why not have it where you can make money off of it and it actually is a contributing member to society, okay? Because
well, I mean,
let's
if you're
go back
and
to
selling it,
giving
you know,
people
whatever,
gold
but...
coins and shit, and making, hey man, here's a basket, can I have some eggs? You know what I mean? Like, we can go back to bartering things, but in the meantime, we need a goddamn government, you know?
Well,
we need, you know what I'm saying?
I don't know, I'm not sure about that. There
you
is
don't
a
think
myth
we need
of
a government?
Government out there. There is a myth of government.
We need some structure. We need to be able to call the cops. We need someone who's going to fucking fix the roads.
We need roads.
Yeah. We need some shit. To say we don't.
Are you
going to
make
sort of
help us make roads?
Well, the problem is when they...
say we don't need any organization is kind of silly.
That's ridiculous.
Well, you have to... See, I don't want to give a name call out here, but
please
check,
don't.
Check
it's
out
300 million people, man. You need
go
some
to my
sort of
podcast
structure.
And check out this show called The Myth of Government that I did a few weeks ago.
Okay.
Let's talk about farts.
No. No. Shut up, Brian. Shut up. I just, I think, you know.
Brian's got to keep it as shallow as possible.
That's right.
Yeah, that's what he's here for.
Exactly my job.
That's what he's here for real.
Let's not get deep at all. Let's keep
we got
it.
Pretty deep, dude.
That's,
we got
way,
deep.
That's deeper than most people.
We can't get scholarly. You can't go dropping 1,000 names. It's just too confusing for all these stoners that are in their car right now going, I'm trying to fucking absorb this, man. But the book's names are important. So the number one book from John Marco Allegro is called The Sacred Mushroom and the Cross, and that is the one we talked about earlier. And Jan's two books that he's published are, what was the mushroom one? The Holy Mushroom.
The Holy Mushroom.
Which is the most recent one.
And then the one before that is Astrotheology and Shamanism, Christianity's Pagan Roots.
And that one's really interesting, too, because there's so many cool photographs in it, and you can just really see.
Yeah, they both have a lot of photos and color.
Nobody would have ever believed that shit was real. Nobody would. Just looking at those photos, would be like, are they making this up? Like, how could this be real?
Yeah, most of them we pulled from ancient library archives, biblical archives and stuff.
Are you going to put them in digital form in any of these books? Because I've honestly caught myself
The Holy Mushroom book is available on Kindle, but because Astrotheology and Shamanism has like 185 color images in it, it was too hard to put it into a clean digital format like Kindle, so
right.
It's left in book only form.
Okay. Man, I feel like we should be able to do that in iPad form or, you know,
just make a couple copies of it.
Yeah. iPads have that option now. I mean, I've been watching, not watching, but I say watching comic books on an iPad because it is like you're watching a comic book. If you've never seen it, you can get iPad has a bunch of different programs, and one of them is for Marvel Comics. And you buy comics, and you can watch them frame by frame. You tap the frame, then it goes to the next frame, and then, oh, it's fucking incredible, man. It's incredible. And if they can do that with comic books and have these high-resolution images for each one, I feel like they should be able to do that with your magazine, or your book, rather, because they do it with magazines. They do it with Wired magazine. Yeah.
Interesting. Wow.
He's got the Marvel Comics one. See how it's set up? It's like, instead of you looking at the
whole
thing. So
how do you keep people from pirating it, though, is the thing?
Because what it does is it has to run inside of a program. So this comic alone, you can't just take out and look at like on you
right.
know like
right.
on
you got PDF. A you got a keyboard in your little case
no,
there.
Bluetooth,
you sexy bitch.
Bluetooth keyboard.
You sexy bitch. You know what you're doing. Right it doesn't even seem much bigger than a regular iPad.
No,
with the keyboard, it's probably the right size. Are you considering taking that with you instead of a laptop?
Yeah, I've been doing that lately.
Oh my god, you're living on the edge.
But it's only I can't work really too much. Like I can't edit podcasts on it
right.
and stuff like that.
And there's no disposable media on it.
Right.
You can't like connect anything. Is there a USB? No, there's nothing, right? You can't connect the USB to it, like a hard drive or anything. And you can't use it as a hard drive. You can't store things on a desktop.
It's
right.
mostly for internet and games. It's kind of like
Asus
Game Boy.
Asus has that new Slate that's a full-on computer. You can edit audio, do everything.
Why can't you put a file on the desktop? Why couldn't you create a new file and put it on a desktop? Can you do that?
I mean, it really depends what you need to do. Like if you want to have like a document, yes, there's a Word program, there's Dropbox, there's
and then you save them inside the iPad? It allows you to save things?
Oh, yeah.
iPad?
It's got a 64 gig hard drive in it.
Really?
Or whatever it is.
32. So eventually, do you think that's what's going to be going on? That seems like a small laptop. Let me feel that.
It's still kind of heavy. I tell you, MacBook Air, they're about to release a new one, I think, next week. The new MacBook Airs are the way to go. The price of MacBook Air is now only $1,000 or less. And
really?
And they're having a new one that comes out next week that uses this new memory that's going to be so much faster. Something like that. I mean, for the majority, unless you're working heavy on the road, that right there is better than any iPad or tablet or anything. Skip that. Wait for the new MacBook Air.
Most people just need to keep up with whatever technology is on websites, right?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. It's just basic work, usually.
Speaking of technology, aren't you the dude that – didn't you transcribe a gang of those Terrence McKenna things that got online?
Shit.
Didn't you? You did, right? Because I remember when I first met you, you
talk
were
about
working
having
on those
to do
from She Who Remembers.
For the last 7 or 8 years, right?
Why have you had to do damage control?
Oh, well, because, you know, as much as he had right, there was a lot of pseudoscience bullshit in there, too.
Really?
A lot of misinformation.
Yeah, people have criticized him for a few things. What was the main thing that you think that you could talk up?
Oh, good. Well, 2012, first off. I mean, now we know exactly where the whole theory came from, where they developed it. Basically, it originally started with In Search Of, and then Jose Arguez and Terrence McKenna picked up on it. And they spread it until, you know, Daniel Pinchbeck made it famous, basically.
So you're talking about the Mayan version of 2012, not even Terrence McKenna's Time Wave Zero 2012?
Well, all of that was launched by McKenna and the In Search Of program of Leonard Nimoy and shit. That was the premiere episode.
So is your assertion that, for people who don't know this, Terrence McKenna came up with a thing called Time Wave Zero Novelty Theory.
Well, you know, Terrence admitted that the novelty theory was wrong.
Hold on. It's a theory that, just for people who don't know what the fuck we're talking about.
All right.
It's a theory that supposedly can track waves in time, and the idea is that time is actually something that you can track with a program, and that this program was based on the I Ching, and that it tracked novelty or human innovation and inventions and great moments of change all throughout time.
Right.
And that by applying this novelty program, this algorithm to the past, he could point out real big spikes in the curve.
Right.
So that was all bullshit?
Well, the problem was, and there was a guy who came out and presented a paper called Mathematical Hallucinations.
This is Watson.
I don't remember the guy's name.
What was the Watson? There was a guy named Watson.
I don't remember. Okay. It's in my ANS book, but came out with a paper, Mathematical Hallucinations, and basically showed that, you know, what Terrence did was arbitrarily place the end date, and you know there's no way really to match up perfectly. He just had to arbitrarily say December 21st, 2012, and if you look in
his other options, he could have said January 30th, 2013. He could
have
said anything.
Well, he could have said anything.
But
in 1975, when the first edition of Invisible Landscape came out, you can look in the first edition, and there is no December 21st, 2012. It just says 2011 or 2012. It's in the 1993 edition.
So it was
when he and Jose Arguez got together and both decided on the December 21st, 2012 date. But,
okay, but
in fact, there
McKenna's
is no
defense.
there is no connection to the Mayan calendar there whatsoever.
Well, there wasn't supposed to be. In McKenna's defense, it took him 25 years to work on this thing.
Well,
and it
you know that
and
he
evolved.
Came out himself and admitted that it was wrong before his death.
What was wrong about it?
That because of the arbitrary place placement, and there was a few flaws in the math that this guy had pointed out in the mathematical hallucinations paper that McKenna stuck to his academic honesty and relinquished the theory.
Well, this is
but
my
the
question,
theory
though,
has continued
if,
on
but,
for
but,
you know, 15
I don't understand,
years since
But
then.
Hold on. I don't understand, because you're saying that he lied. What you're basically saying is that he knew about the Mayan
date
of 2012,
I talked
right?
to his brother about this, Dennis McKenna, and he's mm-hmm. been on my show, and he and I have done a couple shows together as well right. on other places. But what he said was that basically the theory got so popular so quickly that Terrence basically just let it run.
The theory.
The
novelty
the
theory,
novelty
the end
theory.
Date.
Right, and
not
only that, but the entire but theory is based on the appeal to novelty, which is a logical fallacy in and of itself.
What about the theory, I mean, what about the end date coinciding with the end of the long count of the Mayan calendar? That was
well,
bullshit.
There is no, see, there's only one monument in that we know of. It's Monument 6 that even discusses December 21st, 2012, and the only thing that it says is that a king will be robed. That is it. If anything else that's applied about December 21st, 2012, beyond that, has been made up and embellished.
So it might be that Prince dude from England just goes to get a new suit.
I am betting my money on
so,
that.
So, you know, so anybody yeah. who says that it's the end of the world, that they can trace this to the Mayan calendar, all of that stuff is made up. The only thing, the only evidence that we have is a king will be robed.
Okay, really? That's amazing.
That's it.
What about the end of the long count? Isn't it the end of the long count? Isn't
well, this, and this, it, it's like it's era? Like December 31st and January 1st. It's about, you know, that. You know, I mean, there may be a planetary alignment, but... You know, do the poles shift and does the end of the world happen and all of this stuff? I mean, right. people, you know, wake up in the morning, you know, and get ready for work and, you know, take a shower and all that shit like you usually do on December 22nd.
But Daniel Pinchbeck says that we should be in the woods and we should make our own money.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, Daniel Pinchbeck charges $325 a ticket for 2012 conferences as well.
So. Does he really?
Yeah.
Really? Wow, what a genius. He asked me to do one in, like, Utah.
Yeah,
to
well,
go to Utah,
you know, all the power to him.
About
you know, I know Professor John Hupps, who's a who's an expert in Maya studies, and he sent Pinchbeck a whole bunch of information when he was mm-hmm. writing that book, showing that Pinchbeck's whole theory was completely bogus. You know, not only that, but Pinchbeck is using an Aztec god, Quetzalcoatl, to talk about a Maya calendar. What is an Aztec god dealing with a Maya calendar, and why would he come down and come to Daniel Pinchbeck, this New Yorker white guy, to, you know, to reveal 2012 to the world, right?
Wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. He actually says that this thing came down and revealed it to him?
Yeah.
What?
Quetzalcoatl, an Aztec god, came to him and told him about a Mayan calendar and the 2012 thing.
The end of the world is near.
So, you know, remember what I said about arguing the arbitrary earlier when you don't have any evidence of anything, it's bullshit and you throw it out? Well, this is when you take arguing the arbitrary and you make a fucking shitload of money on it.
Exactly.
Okay, but this guy, I did not know that he did this. So I've met him before. He seemed like a very nice guy.
I've met him a couple times too.
I had a conversation with him out in my backyard where we talked about the end of the world. I think that's what he rocks with. So I wanted to get him on the podcast, see if I can get him high and just talk about life. You know, find out what makes you tick, dude. So you're saying that it's all bullshit. So you're saying that he's just...
There's no correlation to the Maya calendar.
And
you
you're
know.
Saying...
Like
did
I said,
he, was, did he
why
say he
would
was
an Aztec
drugs?
God, Quetzalcoatl...
Was it a dream?
That's
the story?
Well, it was a trip or whatever.
Was it a trip?
Right.
Okay.
And so there's an Aztec god telling him about a Maya calendar. We're talking about two different cultures, two different religions, two different calendars.
So the
right?
Maya didn't celebrate Quetzalcoatl.
So it's like
at
it's
all?
Like it's like, you know, Jesus came to me in this vision and told me to teach the world about the Maya calendar, right?
Right. Same ridiculousness.
Right.
The Mayans didn't study Quetzalcoatl, or they didn't have a Quetzalcoatl?
Well, they have their own deities and their own calendars.
But it's not called Quetzalcoatl?
It's not called Quetzalcoatl. That's an Aztec god.
Hmm. So that snake, the plume serpent from the Maya, what is that? What's that called?
Let me see.
Faggotry.
I don't think you're right. I'm going to say you're not right.
I'm not recalling the name off the top of my head.
Okay, so you're basically saying Pinchbeck's full of shit, though.
Yes.
Wow. Strong words. You heard it, Pinchbeck. It's time to come on the podcast for Counterpoint. Point counterpoint
and have him address publicly all of John Hupps's points that Hupps has been publishing The Entire Origins of 2012. He's published it two times on my show, but he's also coming out with a book on the whole thing.
I watched a fascinating show on them trying to figure out how to decode Mayan language, because what Mayan language, like each little symbol, like will like you will say things, like you will see things. Like McKenna described it, like if you had an eyeball and a saw and an ant insect and then a rose. I saw Aunt Rose. That's how you would say I saw Aunt Rose.
Right.
You'd have to do it like that. Like it's incredibly difficult to decipher. But a fascinating documentary about these scientists and archaeologists trying to break it down and figure out what the fuck everything means and how long it took and all these breakthroughs that they came with along the way.
The dates were all wrong too.
All sorts of things are wrong. Well, it's so difficult to decipher. It's like, and I was going to ask you this because I saw this in a documentary once, but and Ari agreed that it's probably correct. But I haven't been able to break it down with anybody who really knows a lot about the ancient Bible and the ancient Hebrew Bible. The ancient Hebrew Bible was not the earliest version of the Bible. The earlier versions of the Bible were the sacred was the Dead Sea Scrolls, right?
Well, the Dead Sea Scrolls were probably written from the 2nd century BCE to about 67 AD.
And it was in Aramaic,
the original, right? Torah would have been written, like Genesis was probably written about 586 BCE. So the Torah would, you know, certain aspects of the Torah, which we don't have an original copy that's that old, but would technically be older than certain sections of the Dead Sea Scrolls. But there's a lot of, you know, identical copies of original Hebrew texts in the Dead Sea Scrolls.
And the Dead Sea Scrolls were written in Aramaic, right?
Written in Aramaic, yes.
And it's on animal skins, right?
Most of it's on parchment. Some of it was on papyrus, and then there was the copper scroll as well.
But there was some on animal skins.
Yeah, most of it was parchment, which is...
Oh, parchment is animal skins?
Skin, yeah.
Oh, wow. That's what parchment is?
Right.
Wow, I thought it was a type of paper. I had no idea.
Right.
Wow. And so that was one of the things that I read, that they were trying to match up different pieces of the Dead Sea Scrolls by using DNA, so that the parchment came from the same cow. So
right.
They were matching the DNA fucking the shit they were writing on,
right,
to try to figure out what pile.
Interesting.
All right, this pile is all this one animal. Let's figure out if this was the same scroll. Fucking incredible, man, when you think about
that. That is a brilliant idea.
Did you have you ever seen this shit that's going on now in Turkey, where they're unveiling that temple that was on the front page of Life magazine recently, or not Life? What's the yellow one? National Geographic.
Oh, okay.
It's a Göbekli Tepe that it completely predates by a huge chunk anything that they thought people were doing 12,000 years ago or earlier. It's you know, the earliest known human civilization is Mesopotamia. It's like Babylon and Iraq.
Interesting. And no, well, I recall hearing something about it, but I haven't studied up.
They found these temples in Turkey, and they've been unearthing them. They're trying to like decipher them and figure out what the fuck it is. This is back when they thought people were nothing but straight hunter gatherers, just roaming around like animals.
Well, we're finding out more and more often that civilization is probably 10 or 15,000 years older than most previously believed.
And a lot of those early civilizations, they had evidence of cattle worship and evidence of psychedelic mushroom worship. Right.
Well, cows and mushrooms go hand in hand.
Yeah, like that one, one of the earliest ones. What was it? How do you say it? Choctaw-Hayuk?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Choctaw-Hayuk or whatever.
Yeah, however you say it. It looks weird when it's written down.
Right.
But it's all cows and shit. They're worshiping cows. Like, I guess you would worship cows because they keep you alive because you eat them. I mean, that does make sense.
And then they poop, and then these things that give you religious inspiration come out of the poop.
Yeah, that's the amazing part of it, is that most likely that's responsible for why Hindus are so fascinated by cows and they love cows.
Oh, sure.
And people don't want to ever even take that into consideration, though.
You know, and there's more than 100 psychoactive plants dedicated to Shiva alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, the Hindus still use bhang or bhang, which is marijuana, and soma was argued by Gordon Wasson to be Amanita muscaria, the red and white spotted mushroom that you see in all the fairy tales and with gnomes and dwarves and in Mario Brothers and shit like that.
And there's so much ancient Hindu art that shows people holding up mushrooms.
Holding up mushrooms or mushrooms coming out of their heads and all this stuff, you know, just like we've got for ancient Christian artwork. There's a lot of that stuff out there.
it's amazing that you have to hear about this from the podcast of a comedian. You know, well, you're not hearing about this on CNN. They won't discuss this. They wouldn't allow you to come on and have a 2-hour uncensored conversation about the origins.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, it's a weird world that we live in, man. It's a weird world that we have this incredible access to information, but yet we're still filtered. We're filtered pretty fucking heavily. It's starting to change, though. It really is starting to change.
You know, and it blows me away, too, how many academics and researchers are out there all over the world and universities working on this stuff. And there's academics all over the place that know about it. But, you know, the mainstream public is completely unaware of
it. Well, for the longest time, for any academic, using even the term psychedelics as a subject of serious research, you know, you go, oh, I'm looking into psychedelics. Like, what the fuck are you wasting your career on, man? You know,
like thanks to Timothy Leary and the bad connotation that he left to psychedelics.
Yes. Yeah.
But, you know, it's interesting that Time Life or that Time Magazine actually had more influence in popularizing LSD than Tim Leary had. And Time Life, you know, it was being run by Skull and Bones.
Huh. How did Time Life have more? Just the stories they ran?
Well, Henry Luce, who is the president of Time Life, he's even, his wife, Claire Booth Luce, is even quoted as saying that she and her husband had more to do with popularizing LSD than Tim Leary ever did.
On purpose?
Oh yeah.
Wow. They had done it and enjoyed it.
Oh yeah, they were.
So.
You know, they were in on it from the top.
But Timothy Leary was the spokesperson because he was a guy like, holy shit, this guy's a Harvard.
Well, he
professor.
Was the one that they put up front as the spokesperson. He was the one that kind of just went hog wild with it.
Was he responsible in any way for the Ted Kaczynski thing?
That's an interesting question. I would have to go to where Ted Kaczynski's locked up and ask him myself, you know.
Yeah.
That would be an interesting guy to do an interview with.
Fuck, yeah. People would be angry. You know, it's like when someone's killed a member of your family, you don't want that person being glorified as, you know, perhaps
just
a misunderstood.
Like, what the fuck happened? Genius. Who gave you the LSD? What was behind the program? Let's get down to the meat. Tell us what really happened there.
Isn't it incredible that he really is like a true, I mean, it's possible. We don't know whether or not that's what caused him, but it's possible. It's a very strong possibility that he really is some real Manchurian candidate type of a dude. He really is
possibly.
Some guy that they, you know, they did some shit to him.
I don't know, though.
Not as programmed as that. You know
I think
I mean?
He might have been more brilliant than that, but.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, the idea that someone could be changed and then become a killer, you know, and that literally it could be done. Not the Manchurian candidate was like he was. What did they? You have to come up to him and say something to him, and he fucking snaps or some silliness like that.
Right.
But I think in the case of Kaczynski, that they might have fried this guy's circuit
right.
to the point that this is the conclusion.
But, you know,
but I don't think
but
it was
see,
planned.
He did all the Unabomber shit 20 or 25 years after these LSD experiments. You know, he
was
a professor.
Really that long?
Oh yeah, you know that those experiments were in the 50s or 60s, and he was professor of math up until mid 90s up at Berkeley.
Really?
Yeah.
So when didn't he? Well, I thought he was only a professor for a few years. Man.
I don't think so. Double check me.
I'm pretty sure.
Do a wiki search and fact
thing.
Check me.
Shit, this is going to take too much time. Let's just say the Net is a very fascinating documentary if you want to watch it. It is from another country. I'm not sure which, so it's all in subtitles.
Yeah, but, you know, there's another really good documentary that people should check out. It's called The Crazy Rulers of the World. It's the Hollywood movie Men Who Stare at Goats is based off of the film Crazy Rulers of the World. Check out that one and The Net back to back. It'll give you some really interesting inside information on U.S. intelligence and psychedelics.
There's too much information out there, and I don't want some of it in my head, Jon Ervin. I don't.
Tough shit. Let your listeners get into it then.
Don't you think, though, that at a certain point in time, it's like, God damn it. You're like, I mean,
you
I'm
mean like,
here
no, see no, say no, la, 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 la.
No, but I'm saying that you dig so deep into the rabbit hole. You're like, fuck, I can never, like, live a real life. Now I'm always looking for skull and crossbones and secret societies and fucking evidence.
Well, I mean,
of,
you know, anybody can look in an old dictionary and see that the Illuminati and Skull and Bones and shit is real. I mean, you pull out a 1911
nobody
Webster's Dictionary,
that.
And that shit's right there.
Yeah,
you know?
Nobody disputes
oh,
that.
Oh, sure, I hear people, oh, the Illuminati conspiracy, but that shit's totally proved.
That's
I mean,
not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, if it ever gets to a point in time where you're just like, you're so absorbed in all this shit that you can't enjoy regular life.
Not really. I mean, I'm fascinated by this research. That's why I do it in the first place. It's a passion, right?
And
I wouldn't do it if I wasn't fascinated by it.
Yeah, but your research is all like exposing all kinds of crazy shit that the government is up to.
Oh, and sure. The founding father of the whole field of psychedelics was a chairman for the Council on Foreign Relations. I mean, when that shit goes public out there in our field, it's going to be explosive. I mean, you know, that's taking away their guy who is the founding father. But I can show that he stole many of his ideas from this other researcher who came 70 years before him in the 1890s. And but you know, there's a whole big, you know, there's scandal on top of scandal on top of intelligence CIA bullshit. And
right, but does it ever get to a point where you're like overwhelmed by this shit, where you just want to just take a deep breath? Do you have your fucking shit on, silly boy?
You know, every once in a while, sure, but usually when I get into and find all more crazy shit, it's like, aha, here's another book, right?
Another book for you to write or to read?
To write.
Oh, well, okay. In that sense, man, it totally makes sense. What the fuck can be done in closing? What can be done? How can people do something about the situation that we're in that's been here since you and I were children, and it is here now that we have children of our own?
The best thing that people can do, in my opinion, that is the real solution, is pick up the trivia, pick up critical thinking, grammar, logic, and rhetoric. That is the best way. It's like installing a mental antivirus system into your brain so that, you know, suddenly it's like taking the red pill. All of a sudden, the green lines are coming down the screen.
Are you
going to
write a book about this?
We've talked about it. A friend of mine is already writing a book on it. We've done a number of documentaries on the Trivium. I run triviumeducation.com, a website that people can check out.
You run this?
I run that website, yeah. So people can check that out. There's videos and stuff up there that people can check out on it. But I would say that that's the most important thing, because once you have that, you can see all the other bullshit going on. It doesn't teach you what to think. It teaches you how to think and how to see through all the bullshit.
Well, that's nice for the people that are going to pay attention. But what kind of a strategy, if any, is possible for letting people know about psychedelics, letting people know about the benefits and positives of these things that have really been held back from people? One of the things that McKenna said that always stuck with me is that living a life and going birth to the grave without psychedelics, to me, is like living a life and going birth to the grave without ever having sex.
I would agree with that, but the problem with just doing psychedelics without critical thinking is that when somebody breaks free of their religious paradigm or the New Age paradigms that are just as much mind control out there as anything else, the problem is if they do psychedelics alone, they're easily manipulated. And so I disagree with McKenna and Leary's theory that everybody should just take it. I think that people should be given the proper tools of critical thinking and then take the psychedelics, and then they really break free.
So basically, we have to start our own cult/educational center.
No, we don't need
it.
And
where do we need to do this?
You know, that's the nice thing about the Trivium, is that it prevents people from buying into religious crap.
Dude, I'm clearly not serious. But if we had a cult, where would we rock this shit? Salt and Sea, Brian?
Canoga Park.
Canoga Park? That's really close by. It'd be much more convenient. There's no... You know, listen... Exposing people to this information is probably step one. There's a bunch of people that are growing up now that are in, you know, high school and college that are reading these types of books and listening to these types of conversations that we're having on this podcast and researching this type of information. And just having this stuff being a part of public discourse, it allows people to know it's out there, and it allows people to start thinking about things in a little bit of a different way. You know, we're all programmed in one way or another, whether we like it or not. You know, we're programmed by our experiences. We're programmed by our environment. And it's not always necessarily for your own good to follow that fucking programming, right?
Indeed.
And so, Jan, thank you very much for coming on the show. And thank you for your books, man. And thank you for republishing The Sacred Mushroom and the Cross. And if people want to buy your books, they're all available on Amazon.com, right?
Yes, they are.
Is that where is there some hippie fucking thing about Amazon? Am I supposed to avoid it? Is it a
Illuminati? No, actually, but if you do buy it directly from the Gnostic Media website, Amazon takes less of our cut. So
okay, you know, there you go. So you know, get it from Gnostic
Media. We are sponsored. You know, all of the research and work is sponsored by the public. So.
This Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we will be at the Irvine Improv. Tomorrow we're going to have an early podcast, a noon one, with not only the Duncan Trussell. So upcoming in the future, I'm still trying to work out this Anthony Bourdain thing. Don't cock block me, Mark Maron. Step, bitch. And so we're also going to work out Sukalos, and we're trying to get Dice Clay too. Dice Clay said he would do it too,
yeah.
Right? All right, holla at your boy. I'll see you guys tomorrow at noon, and thank you very much, and I love you, bitches. And The Joe Rogan Experience podcast is sponsored by The Fleshlight. If you go to joerogan.net and click on the link for the... And Fear Factor better not fuck with my Fleshlight endorsement.
Never thought about that.
They might. They might step in with some fucking shitty letter writing campaign. Don't do it, bitches.
I like
that. Stop
Jenna
hating.
Hayes. Jenna Hayes has a Fleshlight.
This is what we're going to do. Good night. Go to joerogan.net and click on the link for The Fleshlight. Enter in the code name Rogan and you get 15% off. Okay. We love you. You love us. And we'll be back.
Later.
Bye-bye.